Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. To the Carpcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Carpcast. Have you still got a cold, Mark, from when we spoke the other day?
Yes, and I'm getting a bit fed up of it now. The novelty is well worn off. And, well, I think the wife's getting a bit fed up of it as well, because I'm snoring like a bulldozer in bed. If I'm not getting any sleep, she's not either.
Yeah, I'm something similar. I've got, it's not a full-blown cold, but just enough to annoy me. You know, like frog in your throat all the time, like just a tickly cough. And maybe it's the time of year, maybe it's spring. We had the equinox last week. The water temperatures are warming. While it was a good moon period, it was a full moon period, lakes fished a little bit moody. But I did see, I don't know if you've seen it today, actually, Hardy, which is one of the big ones in Cromwell, where we have our social in a week and a bit. That came out today at 44 something, which is a big weight for that fish.
I'll say that is a good weight for that fish. You know, I've not actually seen it, but I've had a busy day at work, so I've not been on any sort of social media. I've been grafting away.
I think Cromwell's pretty much full now, isn't it? Might be able to squeeze one, two maybe in at a push, but we don't need to get any more places if you really, really want to go. I mean, the fact that Hardy's up a few pound, it could mean that Rosie's 50 at the minute. But so approaching 10.40s in there, 60-odd 30s. It's a perfect time of year. We've picked a new moon period. And we've got a great social, Fired Up Barbecues. Going to be there doing all the food. We're going to feed you a week. Julian Condiff's there. It's going to be fantastic. We'll do a Carpcast, I think. We'll do some recording from there as well, won't we?
And, we will. We will endeavour to provide entertainment and a brilliant weekend all round. And, let's hope Hardy and a few of his mates come to join us.
It's Rosie. I've seen that fish, Rosie, on the bank so many times. I photographed it for a number of people, and I'd love to catch that fish. It's a typical Cromwell carp. It's a big one. It's quite a friendly one. Does a good few captures every year, so we like the friendly. ditto. So, have you been fishing this week?
I had 24 hours down on Swan last week on the full moon you mentioned, and meh. Nothing really of note happened. You know, it was not much wind, not much movement. I saw the aftermath of an absolute unit nutting out while I had my marker out in the swim. It was around 10 to 15 foot away from it, which temporarily boosted confidence, but it didn't come to anything. As far as I know, there was nothing out while I was there, but a couple of swims down, Lee Birch were fishing as well, so I had a good bit of company. He's always a good lad, good laugh. But I had another swim learnt. You know, I've got... You know, the more you visit a water, the more you learn it. Nothing is a waste of time, even when the conditions are crap and the fish aren't playing. You know, I know if I get back into that swim, you know, because it is a busy day to kick off, I'm not going to be thrashing it around. I just wrap my rods around the sticks, you know, cast to a certain far bank marker, and I'm on a sweet bumpy gravel spot.
Did you use your swim mapper to remember it?
No, I have a photographic memory.
Wait till you get to,
I wish.
Wait till you get to my age, you'll forget those spots. I mean, I forget,
can't think that far ahead.
I forget a spot within a session, to be fair. I actually did this week. And I'll tell you why. Like, I know people said they've managed for years without rap sticks and stuff like that. But I mean, it's a very simple tool. I mean, you don't have to buy fancy carbon wrap sticks. You can use 210 pegs, which I have done, you know, when I first became aware of it was much easier than pacing rocks out down the bank, you know, which is what we used to do. And sometimes you're casting 70, 80 yards or so or more. You don't always have a long straight length of bank quite long enough to pace it out. But I was actually fishing, had a spot at 10 wraps and a spot at 9 wraps on. I was fishing two rods, one on each, and what I tend to do is to wrap it and then use an elastic marker as well. Just, you know, if I get a tench or something annoyance, I can just clip it straight up you know, put it back out without having to wrap it out again. I actually had a fish. I had a 25 pounder on the first sort of full day that we fished. And it must have moved the marker. I didn't realise, but it was a screamer, and it must have moved the marker. And for the, I was there from Monday to Friday, and for the next 48 hours, I didn't wrap it out again. And I suddenly thought, that's a bit shallower than I was fishing. Like, you know, the bump was just dropping down less. And I was like, and I remember when I found the spot, like, it was all clean in quite a choddy and not very nice area, but I was fishing to this marker, and like, it was all fairly hard clay, but if I dropped a rod length shorter, it was quite a bit deeper. Like, in a lake that's only 5 foot deep anyway, getting an extra foot is significant. It might even be more than an extra foot. I didn't do the depth, but, you know, the fact that you could feel it was deeper, it was taking longer to go down. And I wasn't, for the next 2 days, I wasn't fishing on the spot. I was fishing on 10 wraps. When I actually wrapped it out, thinking, why does that not feel as deep as it did? It seems to be bumping down too quick. I wrapped it out, and the marker was at 10. The marker elastic was at 10 wraps and not 9, which is where I originally marked it. So it just goes to show it, just that little bit of detail. I'm sure it cost me another bite. You know, especially on shallow lakes, those depressions, those extra foot or two depressions. I don't know if they're caused by fish.
I think a lot of time they are. The spot I was fishing, you know, it was quite, you know, a lot deeper water than you were on. You know, I'm talking an average of like 14, 15, and then boom, 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 over the gravel, it's coming up at 16.
Yeah.
Now, for my mind, deeper water down there, it should be full of crap. It should be full of detritus and chod and everything that sinks and washes down there. But no, it was clean, you know. What's cleaned it?
Well, next time you're on there, use that new swim mapper and send it me. Yeah, I want to know where that spot is. I intend to do a little bit on Swan this year. Some points, probably just time the sessions with some decent weather conditions or moons or whatever. But I do intend to join you down there a couple of times this year. Probably won't be like Easter week, like you braved. But yeah,
I was the week before. I mean, this is Easter week now, and I don't mind working all the way through it. And well, I don't mind. I'd rather work than fish.
Yeah, but going back to the mapper thing, I mean, if you're using three rods or four rods, you know, you might have one at 14.5 wraps, one at 17 wraps, one at 18 wraps. It's quite easy to actually forget during the course of a session, like exact. I mean, it's just a confusion thing. You're like, was that one 14.5 or was that one 15? Like your middle rod or your left rod or whatever. And it seems like, so, I know a pen and paper does the job, but I mean, a pen and paper costs more than that swim map app costs. You know, you go and buy a pen and paper from WH Smith's and see if you get any change from a fiver.
You tight sod.
This is my point though, pen and paper actually costs money. This swim app, I've got 11 swims on it for free just by sharing it to two people, and I won't fish 11 swims this year, as we said last week. And this is not an advert for it, I just think it's a great little tool, and I used it for the first time this week. I fished two swims, mapped them both out. Well, no, I mean, recorded the spots I was fishing as opposed to map them. And I actually forgot during the session and had to refer to the app, and I was wrong, if you know what I mean. Like, the app corrected me from what I originally thought, because I thought, I'm sure that right-hand spot wasn't 10 wraps, which is what the marker was wrapped to. And I'm thinking, well, the marker must have moved. I checked the app, and it was 9 wraps on that rod instead, and 10 on the other rod. And, like, I've fished a slightly wrong spot, or maybe not the best spot in that peg.
You know, a lake that's very spotty, I'm quite certain that probably has cost you another bite. And that's why I like, when you mention different wraps of different rods, that's why I like fishing three rods on the same spot. You've only got to remember one distance.
Yeah, yeah. And even then, you know, you can get it slightly wrong. I mean, how good are wrap sticks? I don't know why we're chatting about wrap sticks in this thingy. We're not trying to sell any or anything. But, like, those days when we did fish three rods on the spot and bait fairly tightly, I mean, how good is it to wrap each one exactly rather than do it by sight? You know, the way I used to do it is put the marker out, cast all three rods at the marker, and then put the rod down on wherever, you know, the lead landed in relation to the marker. If it landed on the just to the right, that was a right hand rod. If it landed a little bit wide right, I'd try and get one inside it. But you know, if you're fishing at 80 yards, it's very hard to tell the distance. Like, you think it's landing next to the marker. One could be a rod length behind. One could be, I don't know, 4 foot behind. One could be a rod length and a half behind. And you actually think they're all pretty much bang on the marker. Now, we know that does happen. But if you think, if you've got one rod that's a rod length longer than the other two, if you imagine that line up off the bottom, the line of the longer rod is probably knackering up the two slightly shorter rods, because the line is going to be off the bottom, maybe a foot up, right over the spot. And, you know, it's fairly crucial, I think, to, if you're fishing multiple rods on a spot, to have them exactly the same length. You know, use the same size leads on them so they hit the clip at the same kind of pressure. As long as you feel the bump down, then you know that it's going to be all good. I don't know why we diverge. We're still on the intro, but
it's what we do.
Yeah. Should we have a look on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
I'll tell you one thing I have seen, which has made me chuckle. One of our American listeners, was it Joe Davino, is that his name? I forget without looking at Facebook.
I just call him Joe.
Yeah. He posted a little video of a carp dance. So, you know, like a rain dance that the Indians or whatever used to do to try and make it rain. There's a carp dance to try and get a bite. And since then, I've seen two other people posting videos that they've shot of them dancing behind the rods trying to induce a bite. It led me to think, I mean, what superstitions or what silly things have you done to you know, to get a bite or to try and encourage a bite?
You know, I'm not a superstitious fella in any way, shape or form. I've never had a lucky charm on or anything. But when we spoke about this on the phone the other day, it reminded me of when I was a young kid. I used to fish with a kid called Darren, and, you know, his mum and dad fished. And they used to, you know, take us all, just sat on the local canal, and his mum, Brenda, you know, a lovely woman, she used to be sat there, she'd, you know, bite of a sandwich, a cup of coffee, then just randomly, in the middle of the day, she'd just go, "Hey, fishy, fishy, fishy!" And there's dog walkers looking, what the hell is she on?
Yeah,
she generally caught more than us as well.
Yeah, I talk to myself, certainly, you know, come on, fish. Like, I do that a lot. But I remember when I was younger, I used to try and... I was fishing waters where you kind of expected a bite, you know, in the evenings and stuff, but night fishing seems to be a hell of a lot more productive than it is now, you know, when lakes used to get, you know, pleasure fished in the daytimes. When lakes were lakes and not carp lakes, if you know what I mean, then they had kind of mixed anglers on them, you know, feeder fishermen, float fishermen, whatever. And it was a traditional after dark feeding time, which I think, you know, the carp got used to coming in and mopping up the maggots and the corn and whatever it's got slung in at the end of the session or whatever. And I don't know, I was always more expecting, but I used to count down. I used to say, right, I'm going to get a bite, I'm going to count from 60 to 1. When I get to 1, I'm going to have had a bite. And then you get down to 1, and it's nothing. So I was right, I'll count to 100, so 100, 99, 98, you know, like, and then you get a beep halfway through, you'd be like, go on. You're like, has anyone else ever done that? Am I just batshit crazy? Yeah, I used to count down, but it made me laugh anyway, seeing the carp dance. It made me chuckle.
You know, the first time I heard of anyone doing that was... do you know who the bullet is?
No.
That is a Yorkshire legend. He's a kid called Roger Hind. He runs the Selby Three Lakes. And he did one in front of a few people, which, you know, was quite elaborate. And an impersonation of a carp. Right from everything to swimming along, sucking the hook bait, shaking his head and running. Yeah, I haven't witnessed it myself, because when I asked him, he wouldn't do it. But I'd love to have done. He's a legend, that fella.
Yeah, quite like the sound of that. Obviously, Derek the Don, who we had on last week's show, he used to play music. Was it in that one? I don't know if you've listened to the interview yet, but where he's on about... it was either him or someone I've had a conversation with in the last week, talking about the sound of the buzzers. You know, if you've got your buzzers turned up really loud, and the noise it must make, you know, when it beeps, like your lines running through that buzzer. And obviously stuff like light. I remember the early telephones, you know, which were basically cups and you know, bits of string, you know, it transfers noise. So a beep really loud on your buzzer, bear in mind your line is touching the buzzer, that must go down into the water, especially if your buzzer's really loud.
It's all vibrations, isn't it? And we know how quickly sound travels through the water.
Yeah, sound is vibration, and sound does travel into water. Sound certainly travels down line, wire, braid, whatever it is. And there's a big argument to be said for keeping your, you know, the volume on your buzzers off, muted or whatever, and just having a receiver, which is how I like to fish anyway. You know, I like it. I like just me knowing that I've had a beep or a liner or whatever. And I always worry about sleeping through alarms, even if I have the alarm up full. And, you know, if I forget the receiver, the batteries are going to smell. I just don't like it. I like having that noise right by my head. For 30-odd years, you know, my first proper optonics were with the sensor heads, where the heads made no noise and they were connected via a wire to a sounder box. And I got so used to having that, you know, it right by my head all the time. Like I feel like naked when, you know, I haven't got a remote buzzer, if I'm just relying on the heads to wake me up. I mean, they always do wake you up at night, because it's always quiet at night and your ears are tuned into it, aren't they?
But you know, I can remember vividly the last time I slept through an alarm.
Yeah,
it was this morning. I was late for work. Well, nearly late. I was literally like there, bang on time. Getting back to the fishing thing, I'm exactly the same. The buzzers are off, you know, just the sounder box. But that's more for the, you know, just a disturbance issue. I'm the only one who needs to know when I've had a single bleep. I don't want, especially on a busy day, to get gaff. You don't want half the lake looking at you with binoculars thinking, oh, he's had one, let's move next door.
Something else I've seen on the net is Mr. Rob Hughes. We mentioned it briefly last week. Rob's signed a TV deal. He's moved from Sky Sports to BT Sports, and we got in touch with Rob this week, and I ended up with 4 hours on the phone to him in total yesterday, but the relevant bit we've edited down to an interview now, and let's get Rob on.
So I'd like to welcome a welcome return to the Carpcast is Mr. Rob Hughes. How are you doing, pal?
Yeah, very well, thank you, Jay. Very well indeed. Looking forward to going fishing.
Yeah, me too. Fished last week, not been too great, but the weather's looking fantastic. We've had the equinox. The clocks have gone forward or back. Which way is it?
Yeah, spring forward, fall back. Always remember that one. That's the easy way.
Brighter nights and more carps to be caught, hopefully. But the reason why we have you here is because of all these pictures I've seen with you defecting across from Sky Sports to BT Sports. Is that correct?
Defecting is probably the wrong word, but yes, I've moved. I've worked with Sky Sports for 15 years. Really enjoyed my time there. Got to say, absolutely brilliant. They've been very, very good with what we've done in the past, but. You know, there were a few changes there last year with the fishing side of things, and I've hopped across London and moved over now to BT Sport, and I've got to say, they've really embraced fishing. This is probably, and I'm going to make a really, really bold statement now, this is probably the biggest thing I've ever done. as far as the fishing world is concerned. And, you know, you've known me a long time. You've known what I've done and some of the things that have been achieved over the years. But I reckon this is probably the biggest thing ever that I've done.
Wow. So I saw a large amount of shows. Is it 27 a year for 3 years?
That's it, yes. Forgive me as well as a journalist, first and foremost. I've had to play my cards very close to my chest on this one, and negotiations have been going on a while, but for obvious reasons, as people will now see, it's been magnificent. 27 shows are made up of effectively two packages. Package one is event coverage, and there will be 15 shows of that. So we'll be putting on the biggest and the best angling events and televising those. So, for example, in the Carp World straight away, the British Carp Angling Championships and the World Carp Classic will be televised. The BCAC I've televised for a few years, dropped off it last year, back on again now. So, yes, that's back on the TV. In the match world, because I know there's anglers other than carp anglers that listen to this as well, we'll be putting Match This on, Parkdean Masters, UK Angling Championships, all of the big events. Last year, I've been travelling around with the World Championship squad, so Tommy Pickering and his feeder team, and speaking to some of the other guys as well about getting some coverage for their events. And it's been a big problem within the match angling world that there hasn't been enough coverage. So I threw a plan over to FIPS last year. FIPS are the Fédération Internationale Pêche Sportive. Effectively, they're the governing body, they're FIFA. And I won the rights to be able to televise all of the world events. Wow. So you're then looking at the World Carp Champs, you're looking at the World Float Champs, the World Feeder Champs, the World Predator Champs, the European Feeder Champs, and there's 15 events that are the major league national and international events across the whole of the world that we will now be televising. So for fishing, that is absolutely fantastic. I've got to declare a bit of a state of interest and also a chip on my shoulder as well, because having won the World Cup with Crowe back in 96 and having done it again with England last year in 2015, I don't feel that the public got to know about that as much as they should have done. And it's exactly the same for Tommy Pickering and his feeder squad, and it's the same for angling generally. We're always poor relations, Jay, aren't we?
Yeah. How do you propose to make match fishing? It's one division of fishing. I mean, how do you plan to make that a spectator sport?
It's a little bit like if you look at what Barry Hearn's done with darts and what he's done with snooker as well. And I know that they lend themselves a little bit better as spectator sports than our sport. And carp fishing, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to make that into an actual spectator sport, because the time it takes to do it, you know, you look at how long we have to spend it. The spectators aren't going to come and watch that. And also with angling, an awful lot of the time, nothing happens. But we've seen with the likes of Fishermania and also with Match This now, that when you do get the top anglers in one place, it does draw a crowd. So we just need to jazz some of the events up a little bit to make them more television friendly. One prime example now, and we've seen it over the last couple of years, and I know everybody has a bit of a laugh at it with carp, not sheep, etc., etc., but drop shotting and street fishing is massively, massively popular. It's also very, very trendy, and it's also exactly the sort of thing that we can televise because we can make it funky. So I'm going to coin a bit of a phrase here, but Red Bull fishing. You imagine Red Bull style street fishing,
yeah,
where, you know, you've got a bit of jazz around the outside of it. What I want to do is I want to get fishing in front of non-anglers as well as catering for anglers. And, you know, we've seen the magnificent work that Dean and Ali have done, and obviously Danny by backing it with the big fish off. That's taken fishing directly into people's homes, and it's shown them that it can be fun and that it can be a laugh and that we're not all boring people that go fishing. And you had a very interesting talk on the Carpcast a while ago, and also at the end of the Northern Angling Show about what fishing is, and is it boring, is it cool, is it trendy? And I don't want to resurrect that own argument, because I think people are making mistakes on that, certain people in particular. But fishing is exactly what it is to different people. So if you want to sit in the countryside, dressed in green, by the side of a riverbank, watching nature, fantastic. That's what fishing is to you. That's great, and I will 150% support that. If you decide that you want to go up on a knock-up with your mates on the local commercial, and you're fishing for F1s for 4 hours on a Saturday, and you're not really in a natural environment, you're in a very unnatural environment, but you're enjoying it and you're having fun with your mates, brilliant, that's what fishing is to you. If you want to go out and catch big fish, brilliant, that's what it is to you. And fishing is so many different things to so many different people that absolutely nobody has the right to turn around and judge anyone else's fishing. And when I talked to non-anglers, and BT, this was a prime example, because they were saying, oh, fishing, what, you know, what tell us the fishing thing. And I liken fishing to motorsport, in that in motorsport, you've got wheels and an engine. And in fishing, you've got a rod and a fish. And other than that, that's where the similarity ends. In that, in motorsport, you might be massively into Formula One, but you don't care about dune buggy racing, or you don't really care about MotoGP, because it's not your sport. And sort of fishing's a little bit like that, but fishing as a general sport, like motorsport, is all-encompassing. And what we tend to find is that whilst you might not do one of the crossover disciplines, you are interested in it because there are tactics that you can pick up, etc., etc. So I'm almost contradicting myself a little bit there. But if you like fishing, you generally like all sorts of fishing. But what we shouldn't do is we shouldn't knock it, because you would never see a MotoGP rider turning around and going, Formula One's crap. Yeah. It's boring. It, you know, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, the key for me, and this is where we start to get a little bit more serious now, the key for me is that fishing needs to be portrayed properly, it needs to be promoted within the sport, and it needs to be put before people outside of the sport. And one of the big things, and this is where I come back to my little chip on my shoulder, having won two world championships and not got recognition from the wider public now, and that's not a personal ego thing, that's a I want fishing to be publicised more, is we need to break a news agency. That's what we need to do to be able to get fishing news out there. And BBC don't class fishing as a sport, and Reuters don't class fishing as a sport. So you've got two of the biggest news agencies there not following the sports reports. Now, I tried and tried and tried for ages and ages and ages to get the fishing results from the BCAC and also from the UK champs onto Sky Sports News, and they wouldn't take it because they're predominantly football, cricket, tennis, mainstream sports like that. So how on earth can we go forwards? Well, from my own point of view, A, as a bloke who fishes for his country, B, as the manager who has a duty to promote that, C, now as an angling ambassador working with Angling Trust and Sport England, it's my job and my role to promote fishing. I'm going to be kicking people's doors in. I'm not going to knock on the door. I'm going to keep knocking on that door, and if they don't answer it, I'm going to kick the door in. And they've got to take notice of us, because you know what? We're one of the biggest participant sports in the country. We've got fantastic people following our sport. We've got fantastic people participating in it. And we tick a number of boxes about what we need to be doing in sport. So BT have encompassed that really, really well. And the big thing is this. Firstly, we're on the telly. 27 programmes on the telly, 15 event programmes, 12 as a Top Gear style magazine programme, taking fishing out and showing what it's like. That's so wild. I'll come back to that in a minute if I may. But the big thing with BT is that not only have BT put it on air, what we're doing is we will have on the BT.com website, we'll have a fishing button on BTSport.com.
Yeah.
So where you look across that and you see football and Aviva Rugby and MotoGP and UFC, what you'll then see is fishing.
Yeah, brilliant.
Now, what that does is it shows that we're up there with the other sports. Not only that, but I've actually got them to take fishing on the BT Sport app. So if you like one of those other sports, you get news feedback from them. Just like a Twitter page, you'll get a news feed where there's push notifications about Lorenzo's just done well in the MotoGP, or Conor McGregor said this in the UFC. You know what? We're now going to be getting fishing feed going down that. And that, to me, is absolutely enormous, because it elevates fishing to a place that it's never been in before.
The old school are going to love this.
Well, I don't care. The old school can live in the old times. You know, I hear this all the time, and you know, I'm very aware of where we are. And I had some lovely times. I've been carp fishing seriously since 1987. So I was around at what I feel is the best time of carp fishing, in that I've lived through the boom. I've lived through the growth and expansion. I lived through the secret times before now. And, you know, you can only live when you are. You know, people look back and go, oh, it was great back then. No, it wasn't. Absolute rubbish.
Anybody
it wasn't.
Anybody who thinks the past is better than the future is
well, they're deluded.
Yeah, of course. There is nothing that hasn't advanced for pretty much the better. And yes, banks are busier, but you know, it's progress. I was joking there, I was being flippant, because I can picture a number of people with their head in the hands at that last paragraph.
Yeah,
that
you said. Well, I don't but care, mate.
It's brilliant. You know, we want fishing to be out there. And like you say, you're head of Sport England, it's your job.
Let me. I'm not quite head of Sport England yet. That's a fantastic promotion. I work with Sport England to promote angling and
head of the fishing.
But, yeah, head of Sport England. Well, my word, I've been promoted. But you know, let me say this to anybody out there that is looking back and saying it's better in the olden days. You, my friends, whoever you may be, are amazingly negative, because you know what? You've already lived that time. You can't have it back. The time that you've got, the best time of your life. The absolute best time of your life is now.
Yeah.
Because now is when you're living and you've got your future to look forwards to, and you reflect on your past. And again, very, very aware of the past. I think it's very important to remember the past, because the past shapes who you are and where you're going. And you must always remember that. But we're living now. We've already lived yesterday. We can't have it back.
Yeah. I love that.
So,
nice, you know, philosophy.
Let's live for where we are now and what we can do in the future, rather than what it all used to be, particularly if it's rose-tinted spectacle rubbish. You know, great, it happy memories behind us.
Yeah, it's usually rose-tinted spectacles. But moving on, I mean, this entertainment-style programme, I mean, you're going to be covering all the matches and stuff. I mean, that doesn't particularly turn me on. A Top Gear-style fishing programme does get, you know, yes, whet the appetite.
Well, let me touch just back briefly before I move on to the New Star magazine programme. Let's look at the seriousness again now of promoting sport, and how do we promote sport? I'm going to use cycling as a prime example. And there are two ways of promoting sport. One, bottom up. Two, top down. Very, very simple. If you have a bottom-up promotion, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get the normal man on the street to go out and do whatever it is you need him to do. If you're going a top-down promotion, you're showing aspirational and inspirational pictures, features, whatever it is, and you're trying to encourage people from the top down to start stuff. So let's have a look at cycling again, as I say. 10 years ago, and forgive me if you've heard me say this before, but 10 years ago, the only reason you got on a push bike was, the majority of the time, it was either because you'd had a drink drive ban, or alternatively, you wanted to get to work on the cheap. That was it. Now, let's have a look how big the cycling industry is now. Absolutely massive. Bike shops are really trendy. New brands have developed. A whole industry has developed around cycling over the last 10 years. Can I ask you the question, why do you think that is?
I would guess we're more conscious of health.
That's a little bit towards it. That's been an assisting driving force behind it. But actually, the big push behind it has been elite level success. In the Olympics, we are fantastic. We're now the world leader in cycling. We win more gold medals than any other nation in cycling. Let's have a look at the Tour de France. Actually, a few years ago, we didn't even bother putting anyone in it. Now, with the likes of Bradley Wiggins, if you look at Chris Hoy, Froome, all of the guys that have been promoting elite level cycling, and the girls as well, look how good the girls are at it. You know, the promotion and publicity that cycling has had over the last 10 years, primarily by Sky, but now by BBC as well. But elite level sports have been promoted very, very well because we're good at it. As a result, everybody's jumping on it and saying it's great. Now, the government also pushed the health benefits of it as well. And that's ultimately the driving force, but the marketing force behind it has been elite level sport.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's why cycling is so big. Think back just before cycling, and rowing was the trendy sport. Why? Guess what? We had Pinsent and Redgrave. They were going out. They were winning gold medals. They were doing really, really, really well.
We love success, don't we?
We do love success. And there's not many sports that we're more successful in than fishing, to be fair. We had 4 full international gold medals last year. We had a number of home international gold medals. Why doesn't the world know about that? Because fishing's boring, or fishing's not cool. I'm afraid that is completely and utterly wrong. It isn't boring. It is cool. And by God, if I've got anything to do with it, the world is going to know about it. And we'll start with BT Sport and 27 programmes. How's that?
I like it. I like where you're going with this. So come on, the entertainment. Cool. How are we going to make us sit there and laugh at the telly?
Well, again, you know, this is the sort of bottom-up style promotion, which is the aspirational. Let's look at Top Gear again, how they change people's perceptions of cars and motorsport and all the other bits and bobs. You know, I used to love Top Gear when it was in its original raw form, and if I look at it through rose-tinted spectacles, those were the days, wasn't it marvellous then? And actually, you had William Woolard and a few of his mates, Tony Mason, all talking about the insides of an internal combustion engine and whether or not you should have 95 or 98 RON octane fuel, and I'm a bit of a petrolhead, I'm afraid, but you know, what was all that about? For me, absolutely marvellous. How many people used to watch it? About 35,000.
Yeah.
Guess what? How many people watch it now? Well, it was the biggest watch programme on BBC. It's dropped back now, obviously, because it's gone, and the biggest watch programme is Countryfile. So let's have a look at that. Let's have a look at Top Gear, taking cars out, making them interesting, making them funky, putting some cool presenters in and having fun with vehicles. Let's have a look at Countryfile now, which is interestingly the biggest programme that's on BBC at the moment. And actually, when that was Countryfile in its original form, which was effectively Farmers Weekly, once again, as a country lad, I used to quite like it. But watching somebody stick their arm up a cow's backside didn't necessarily do anything for me. And indeed, it didn't do too much for the wider population. But if you have a look now at how big Countryfile is, loads and loads of people watch it because of the way they've slanted the programme to cater for the general view. Brilliant. I watched Bear Grylls. Have you seen Bear Grylls' British Adventures? Great British Adventures.
I don't watch TV. You blow my mind that Countryfile is the biggest watched programme on TV. So I'm really interested as to how they've done that.
Incredible, isn't it? I'll tell you how they've done it. And well, let me throw another couple of programmes in that you may or may not have heard of. I'm sure you will have done. One of them is Blue Peter.
Yeah.
Now, Blue Peter used to be the children's entertainment programme. You know what? It still is. It is mega trendy. It's amazingly trendy now. They've got three young, cool dude presenters that go out and do various things that kids are interested. And it's educational, it's aspirational, and it's entertaining. And you know what? It works. And Blue Peter's a brilliant programme. And the last one I'll throw into the equation now will be The Gadget Show. And The Gadget Show was another show that really, really took the world by storm. That was on Channel 5. Yeah. And that was testing various different gadgets with different challenges and doing it in a completely different way. What have those programmes got in common? They're magazine-style programmes. They are multi-presenter programmes. They are chopped into various different bits with one main theme running through the middle of them. So if you look at it, it doesn't take the brains of Einstein to work out that format works, what the public wants. All you've got to do is make the subject interesting. Now, if you can make cars, and you can make the countryside, and you can make electronic gadgets, and you can make kids' stuff really interesting and really trendy to make them four of the best watched programmes on TV, why can't we do that with fishing?
Completely agree. So can you divulge the format then? Who's going to be involved?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. I will soon, but not yet. But needless to say, there will be some fun stuff. You know, let's look at how the boys that are doing very successful over YouTube have done it. You know, look at Alan and Urban Banks. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't it? How entertaining is that? It's just
that Eurobanks 2 on the new Nash one. I said it to Alan the other day, and I truly mean it. It's the best bit of angling footage, most inspiring piece I've ever watched in my life.
You almost want to stop watching it and go.
I've been making plans ever since. I was researching last night. I'm definitely going. Just deciding which week. But the point is it made me want to do it even before they got to the Slovenia bit. You know, in freelining the maggots on this little lake in Czech Republic, and it was inspiring. And it was inspiring because of Alan's enthusiasm. I felt tired watching him.
He's incredible, isn't he? He's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
So, you know, and let's flip now and let's look at Mark Pitchers. And let's look at what he's done with the challenge. And
yeah,
you know,
another one. Yeah.
Such an entertaining view, so funny. Just his sense of humour, his personality, his character. And this, again, is what drives things forward. And I think sometimes some of the personalities and characters that are involved in the television programmes, they're not as lively or enthusiastic towards the viewer as they should be. Now, of course, you can't overstep the mark. But if anybody has met Alan, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. if anybody hasn't met Alan, you can't be in his presence without being impressed by his enthusiasm, and it is contagious.
Yeah.
He's constantly on the go, he's constantly on the move, he's always smiling, he's always massively enthusiastic. Guess what, guys? It's absolutely slinging it down with rain. There's a real muddy ditch down there that's probably got an 8-pounder in it. Let's go out and have a go at it. And I want to go with him.
Yeah.
I want to be in a ditch catching an 8-pound fish that normally you just wouldn't look at. Why? Because he's bringing the love back into fishing, and that's exactly what we want. There's no elitism, and it's the same with Mark as well. Mark pitches. There's no elitism there. It's brilliant. You see the character coming through, the enthusiasm, the humour, and they sort of, to me, encompass what's great about fishing at the moment.
I really hope this show is you and them too. I'm going to be disappointed if it's anything else.
I'm using those as examples. Once again, I can't say anything at all as of yet. But
I understand. I'm sure Alan told me as well by now.
Just there's so many funky things that we can do. And I look at what the guys have done with their shows, and I take inspiration and aspiration from them. And you know, fishing isn't just about talking about whether you need a size 8 or a size 6 and what colour swivel the carp can see from 97 yards. And there's bits of it that we want to see, but the programme to me wants to be an amalgam of Top Gear for the entertainment, of Country File for the factual side of things. And again, you know, make no mistake, there's some important issues that we need to get across, that if we can put them out in a Country File style way, yeah, to the wider public, they will be slightly more aware of what's going on. And I'll sort of give you a little tease as to one issue that I'm looking at the moment. But there's an awful lot of areas of angling that work with conservation for the protection of protected species. And sharks are one example of that. And everybody loves a shark. You either love a shark because you love a shark, or you love a shark because you like the sinister aspect of Jaws and you're scared of sharks, but you still love them at the same time. And down in Cornwall, there's an awful lot of anglers that work down there with the UK Shark Trust to catch, release, promote, measure, do all of the things that they do there. And you know what? The general public doesn't know about that. So why don't we, rather than painting the picture that anglers are barbaric who just want to go around and hurt fish, why don't we show them that, you know what, when it comes to the riverbank, we're the people that are at the forefront that see the problems that are happening with pollution and predation before anyone else does.
Yeah.
When it comes to the sea, we're the ones that can see what issues are going on with regards to animals that are changing, you know, or if there's pollution issues, or, you know, the bass situation is a prime example. And carp anglers may not be aware of it, but bass are being overfished, and certain areas need to be protected where they are. There's legislation relating to that at the moment as to what's going on. And what we need to do is we need to get it out there to the wider public that, you know what, fishermen aren't barbarians. What we are is we probably care more about the countryside and the environment than any of those plastic environmentalists who sit at home on the television having hardly ever got their feet wet.
They
sit there and they don't really know what's going on. They just believe something because they've written it somewhere, whereas we're at the forefront of conservation and nature a lot of the time, because you know what, we're out there doing it, and that's what matters.
Yeah.
So you got me on my propaganda soapbox there, Jay.
Yeah, well, I love the idea of what you're doing. I'm glad that it's you in charge of it, because I see you being always the right person for these sort of jobs, and you know, you're the ultimate diplomat, negotiator, and I believe you know what people want. And it sounds to me like we can trust this to be a great format, because you're coming at it from all angles, which is the key. You know, and you're doing it with an informed opinion. You've educated me with this Country File, and I might have to watch it now. I just don't watch much TV these days. I'm down the our friends' route, where I probably watch more pay-per-view telly of stuff that I'm interested in. Have you got any concerns that BT Sport is not as widely watched? I mean, if it, I have it, but I only have it because of the UFC.
It's very interesting, actually, because if you'd have spoken to me 3 years ago, I would have had a concern along those lines. But actually, they're a really progressive channel.
Yeah.
And without giving too much away with regards to trade secrets, the guys at BT are a very, very friendly organisation. They are very forward-thinking in what they do. And you know, if you look at Channel 4, how Channel 4 broke the mold of what television was a few years ago, You know, they weren't scared of pushing issues that people didn't want to talk about, particularly the BBC. Yeah. They were also very forward-thinking on the stylistics of programmes that they wanted to put out. BT are a little bit like that. And also what they're prepared to do is share things with other channels as well. So as an organisation, they seem, with my limited knowledge of them so far, but everything that I've discussed with them over the last sort of 6 to 8 months, because these negotiations have been going on for quite a long time, but everything that I've discussed with them for a reasonable period of time is coming to fruition now, and they're standing by the word on what they will do, which is great. Now, BT Sport is, as a channel, is 5 years old. There was one channel originally, and they were effectively a small player. Let's have a look where they are now. They've got three channels. So they've got BT Sport 1, 2, and also Europe. So they've got a reach into Europe. Their figures now, as a prime example, if you look at something called BARB, which is the British Audio Research Bureau, and we're getting into the boring tedium now of media, but there is a watchdog that watches what reach is, how many people watch various different programmes, what your daily reach is, who's the best programme through the course of the week. And this is where all of the figures are gleaned from. And BT Sport's reach on their channels is bigger than Sky Sports 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Now, 3 and 4 were where we were as anglers, so immediately the reach figures are bigger. And when I say bigger, they're bigger by a considerable margin. Yeah. However, the reach, remember, isn't just television with us, because let's have a look what else BT do. They've got mobile phones, they've just bought out EE, they're the biggest communications company in the UK now, I believe. Mm. And if we can get news going over onto BT Yahoo, everybody that uses Yahoo as a search engine will be getting news through from phishing.
Yeah.
Now, they're a sister company to BT Sport. So BT Sport is already pushing our stuff out through the Sport, or will be pushing our stuff out through the Sport app, and also through their .com website, which is magnificent. So, you know, it isn't just about television. This is one of the things that we need to be very, very aware of, that, you know, media, television media is great, but it isn't all just about television media these days. There are other options. And again, this is where, you know, there has been a comment recently. It's not all about one particular area. What you need to do is you need to cover all of your bases. And if we can get Twitter feed, and if we can get through BT Sport app, if we can be on BT Sport website, if we can be on BT TV, which is the internet version, if we can be on BT Sport, which is the main satellite broadcast version, if we can then be going out on VOD, which is video on demand afterwards,
yeah,
then suddenly, when you look at across platforms, they call it the BT Hub, because BT have got so many different communication medias, and they're absolutely at the forefront of it.
Yeah.
That being with them means that we are ready to push the button on any media that comes out in any direction. And believe me, they are massive.
Are they, I mean, the make or break in the UK for sports channels has always been football. Are they pursuing like the Premiership quite aggressively as well? Are they still, I know they've bought a decent share of it, haven't they, the rights to it?
Yeah, I can't talk about what they're doing outside of fishing, obviously. Firstly, I don't know enough about it. Secondly, it's not my position to talk about it. And thirdly, if I did, then I would probably get myself in trouble for talking about commercialism and you know, aspects that are outside of my control. So forgive me if I swerve that question a bit.
The ultimate diplomat again. That's your lawyer training coming in. I thought they might have, you know, they may have just indicated as a general business plan model for themselves, that look, you know, we are continuing to you know, actively pursue football. I mean, that's always been the make or break for sports channels in the UK.
Well, let's have a look at what they've got. And they've got Champions League for a start.
Yeah.
BT Sport's the only place to watch the UEFA Champions League and the UEFA Europa League live. In addition to that, they've got Premier League. I'm just looking on their site now for the stats. They've got 38 Premier League matches.
Yeah.
Not only that, but they've got Aviva Premiership Rugby. Now, I know it's not football, it's rugby, but that's getting a massive following now. And rugby is, you know, it's a big old sport, and you don't get any bigger within that sport than the Premiership. Let's have a look into motorsport now as well, and have a look at how far they're pushing forward with that, and that you've got MotoGP now. And MotoGP is just, it's just really, really taken off. It's caught me even before I got involved with BT Sport. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, and those that know me well will know I'm a bit of a rally nut, but they've also got the World Rally Championships now as well,
yeah,
which is fantastic. They've got UFC. So, you know, if you look at the demographic of what those sports are, they've got a massive amount of football, including both European and domestic. They've got the main amount of rugby. They've got a big amount of motorsport. They've got UFC. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of big sport going on there.
Yeah, you've sold it to me. Like I say, I have it anyway. I have Virgin Media, which the BT Sport channels are part of the package automatically with that, which is great for the UFC, which is, has took off massively as a sport in the UK in the last sort of 2 years. Many thanks to Conor McGregor as well for the actual...
what a character.
Yeah, it's a house. He's a household name now, which for a UFC fighter is unheard of. You know, I've been following it for quite a number of years, probably 10 years, but he's done wonders for the sport, and you know, he's kind of from an extended Great Britain, so we claim him as our own. But I already knew. I mean, I was being a little bit devil's advocate with my questions. I know that BT Sport have almost the same amount of games football wise for the Premiership and Champions League as Sky Sports do, and obviously more than the terrestrial channels. I know they're actively pursuing this. Just thought you might give us an insight into kind of their thinking. But you've just explained it all just off their website there, that they've got stuck into pretty much all the sports that are growing. They're helping to grow them, and fishing's obviously, you know, they're obviously actively pursuing all the popular areas, and as we know, fishing is the biggest participant sport, and they've just committed to 3 years of fishing shows, so that tells you where
exactly
they're going as a business. And then when are we likely to see the first offerings?
Well, this is how progressive a company they are for a start. The UK Angling Championships round one is the first one, and you know, the event coverage will go out through the course of the summer. And, you know, I want to promote that elite level on the competition side of things, because I think that if we can establish it alongside other sports, it will be recognised as a good sport by other sports, or a high-level sport. So round one of the UK champs is on the 4th of May. One of the things that happened with Sky in previous years was that we would film all the events through the course of the summer, and then they'd be shown on block at the back end of the year after most of the big finals had taken place.
Yeah.
With BT, we've changed that. So what we've done now is we've said, right, you don't film the FA Cup in May and show it in Christmas.
Yeah.
It goes out as soon as possible afterwards. Now, we can't show it live because they're too expensive, and obviously they don't lend themselves well to live television. But our aim is to get the programmes out within 2 weeks of them being on. So UK Champs, round one, 4th of May at Lindholm. It will be on television the week commencing the 16th of May. So it'll be really, really quick turnarounds on them. The other thing is that the angling press, and this is where I'll digress a little bit. When I was going through the negotiations about what, why, when, how, etc., 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 one of the things that the guy I was dealing with at BT said was, look, Rob, basically, if you move to us, we'll give you a bit of a hug. Sorry, we'll give you and angling a bit of a hug.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll tell you what, if you give me and angling a bit of a hug, I'm sure that angling will hug you back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to have that sort of support from that sort of high-level broadcaster is absolutely brilliant. And I'm really, really hopeful that angling will support BT in doing this, because obviously, you know, they've stuck the neck out a little bit here. Nobody's got that much fishing coverage. My company gives more fishing coverage than any other company. I know Danny and the Quarter Boys do a reasonable amount, but we do more because of the sheer number of events that we cover.
Yeah.
And I've never done as much as I'll be doing this year. So that's a massive amount of television promoting angling. So, you know, it would be great if everybody can jump on board and support them. One, because we'll get to see lots of fishing, but two, because it will only get better.
I'm sure they will. I mean, you've sold it to me. There's another 5,500 people going to hear this episode over the next 4 weeks. So that's another 5,500 people that are convinced, I think, that I'm sure will be tuning in. As you say,
cool. A
lot of people will have BT Sports now because of the football, because of the UFC and stuff. And if they haven't, I'm sure one of BT Sports' reasons for doing this is to tap into the...
To attract new members, of course.
Into the 4 million anglers that I saw stats on the other day, which... Are you aware? I mean, I've always quoted figures that I got from 2011 from the EA, which was About there was 1.3 million rod license sales and about 2.5 to 3 million anglers worth 1.5 billion a year to the
there or thereabouts. There's the problem with these surveys is obviously it takes a while to do them, and by the time they're printed, they don't do another one for a couple of 3 years, so it's changing all the time. But we can see what freshwater rod license sales are. We can see, because that's a pretty quick turnaround, we can estimate how many people we think there are that go sea fishing. Through either sales or the number of boats that go out or whatever. And if you're looking at circa 1.8 to 2 million, that's a sort of best guess estimate as to how many anglers there are at the moment.
My point is I read something on the .gov website the other day, so these are government figures, and it was almost double. They quoted, I think it was 3 billion and 4 million anglers. 3 billion turnover and 4 billion anglers. I mean, 4 million anglers. I don't know where they've got that from, but it's on the .gov website. So.
What it might be, and I saw a very similar figure because someone got in touch with me and said 6 million anglers in the UK. And it was interesting because it was a company that trade from overseas, and they wanted to know why their English reps weren't doing as much business as they should do if there were 6 million anglers. And I read it again, and it was a survey from 5 years ago that said over the last 3 years, we have had 6 million anglers. So just read the small print, because, you know, again, I've got to be very careful what I comment about here, but we need to be as accurate as we possibly can. But if there are figures of 4 million, it may be an old figure, or alternatively what it might be is it might be a figure saying over the last 2 years there have been an estimated 4 million people out there. What I can say at the moment is that rod license sales are circa in the region of 1 million. They dipped. Full rod licences dipped just below 1 million in this year just gone, which is the lowest it's been for a while. Yeah. When you add the estimated number of sea anglers in, nobody can say exactly how many they are, because sea anglers don't need a rod licence. And also, what's a sea angler? Do you class a sea angler that's somebody that's angling regularly? Or is a sea angler somebody that's been out once on a boat at Brixham last year when they were at Torquay on holiday?
Yeah.
You don't know. But what we can say is that if you did a broad brush approach and said there are somewhere between 1.5 and just over 2 million anglers, pin the tail on the donkey on the number in between there, that's about right.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but either way, you know, what BT look at in particular is the demographic of their viewer. Because the sort of people that watch football, the sort of people that watch rugby, the sort of people that watch motorsport, and the sort of people that watch UFC are more or less exactly the sort of people that go fishing.
Yeah. Certainly.
So, and this is where you've got a two-way street of stuff, because if we can put out decent fishing programming to the people that watch football, rugby, UFC and motorsport that don't already go fishing, they might like it and they might decide they want to crack at it. And if they do, that will assist and lift our numbers again.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think it's great for the sport. I love progression in everything. I like faster cars. I like, you know, everything is moving forward. It's good. And I think this is a really bold move by BT Sport. I'm glad they're committing to it properly. I love the instantness of it as well. Nobody likes waiting for stuff. And we've got an instant information age, and you're saying we're going to be seeing, you know, knowing the results of something and then watching the program on it a year later
it's a bit slow. It's a quick turnaround. But here's a prime example of how quick and how progressive they are when they move to schedule in TV programming. Normally they start scheduling in 12 weeks before the transmission date. They firm it up 8 weeks before, and they have to firm it up 8 weeks before because they have to send the details out to people like TV Quick and the magazines that are advertising. Yeah. And then 4 weeks before, that's more or less set in stone. Yeah. Now, there is the possibility of changing if they feel that there is a justified reason for doing that. So I went into BT on the Friday. Let's have a look. The Friday before. So the deal was signed off. Part two of the deal was signed off on the 11th of March. Yeah. And I went in. They asked me to go in for a photo shoot, which I must say I was ever so embarrassed about, because I can sit there grinning with a carp. And I can talk the bloody hind legs off a donkey. But when it comes to sitting on Gary Lineker's desk with a fishing rod looking cool, or whatever it is that they want to look at, I find it immensely difficult. I'm just one of the lads the majority of the time, and I find stuff like that quite tricky. But anyway, went in on the 11th. We then did the press releases. Already, Broadcast Magazine, or Broadcast Now Magazine, picked the story up. And they sent it round TV Land because they thought it was really big news. There was a big fuss and kerfuffle about how fantastic this was and wow, that's a bold step, because again, you know, they're not taking six programs, they're taking 27. So TV Land has taken notice, and they've turned around and said, right, we want some programming quick, we can't wait until after the 4th of May, what can you give us now? So because the UK Angling Championships is starting on the 4th of May, what we're going to do is we're going to run last year's series now, so the first programs will be going to air on Wednesday and Thursday next week.
Oh wow.
How quick is that?
Yeah, that's great.
Because they've said, we love how everybody's supporting it. We love how much fuss is the wrong word, but how much of a buzz there is about this at the moment. We want to get fishing on now to show that we're in it.
Well, if you haven't got a BT Sports subscription, I think you need to be subscribing now and getting on it. There's, as you say, there's tons of good stuff on there, other than these new fishing programs that are coming. And I'd like to thank you for coming on and telling us all about it.
No problem at all, Jay. Thanks ever so much. Anytime. And once again, keep up the good work. You kept me going through a really long queue the other day. And I've got to say, I love the Nashy one. Where I reckon he'd probably had a tipple or three, and his speech was a little bit slurred on that one. But he was enjoying himself coming out with what he needed to come out with. So well done once again.
Cheers, Rob. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you to Rob. Interesting as always. Like I said, I spent a hell of a lot of time on the phone to Rob yesterday, putting the world to rights, discussing stuff. And we wish him all the best with the new show. And I've heard a few things that are being kept under wraps for now about the content, and it sounds really good. And it really sounds like BT Sport are going places as well, you know, not just in fishing, but I think we should support them. The fact that, you know, they are doing this for angling, you know, and committing to such a large run of shows, I think it's great. Don't you, Mark?
I do. They've got UFC and fishing. Just take my money, BT Sports.
Yeah, they've got half the Premiership as well. If you're into the football, you know, they cover so much stuff. As Rob mentioned in the interview, it's absolutely fantastic. We've got Mark Holmes coming up very shortly. The whole reason we got Mark on is because I wanted to talk about liquids. He's been doing a few talks on it recently, and as we know, Mark kind of blows people's minds with his out of the box thinking. Some people think he talks rubbish, some people really get a lot out of it, and to be fair, this is a pretty mind-blowing interview. If you're into bait, if you're into doing something a bit different for the year, then you've got to listen to this. One of the things he mentions in it a lot, he talks about the hydro wheat, talks about alcohol content, sugar and stuff in the liquids. And I had no idea. We've been advertising DNA for quite some time because I know they do some absolutely fantastic boilies. Lots of my friends use the stuff. And, you know, we've been focusing on the Zig deals that they do, all the post-free deals, everything that you can get a discount off using the code CARPCAST5. What I didn't realise is the range of liquids that they have, and a lot of this is to do with Mark. He talks about this hydro wheat, so if you go to their website, dnabaits.com, you can have a look, just like I'm doing now. And this hydro wheat, I don't know if you're on it as well, Mark, but it's looks like at least a litre container, maybe slightly more. It's only $8.99. There's other liquids, the hemp oil, the tiger nut extract, the beta stim, which Mark mentions in this thing, which sounds really interesting, like a betaine liquid. What I can say, I mean, you haven't heard this interview yet, it's going to blow your mind. It's certainly blown mine, and I'm on the website about to order stuff myself. I mean, you can do any of the post-free boily deals. Do you want to tell us some of them, Mark?
I can. Just let me get back to it, because you've redirected me on the DNA website. Now I'm looking at liquids.
You can get an extra 5% off everything. They do a load of post-free deals delivered straight to your door. I've had a word with Jason today, and we're going to look at some point in the future, maybe doing some sort of liquid offer. But for now, they're extremely... I think they're cheap. I mean, there's liquids from $2.99, the majority between £2 and £6. Almost everything they do, and the hydro wheat, which Mark talks about, is £9, $8.99. So everything's between £3 and £9, and there's all sorts on there. You know, there's a liquid yeast, hot hemp, salmon oil, liver extracts, hemp oil, molasses. I mean, we talk about molasses in the interview as well, which was probably the first liquid I ever used boiling my hemp in it when I was about 12 years old for the rivers. Do you ever hear of that, Mark, like boiling hemp in the molasses treacle?
That's not something I've heard of or done, but I've used molasses to when I first went on Icon years back. And I bought several sacks of Vitalin. I was, caking that up with the boiling water and then, adding lots of molasses, mainly because it was cheap from the local food store.
Yeah, it's, again, we go into detail about it. I mean, it's a must not miss interview, this, whether you're interested in liquids or not. It's, I know the debate talks go down fairly well with our listeners. But like I say, you can get all the stuff Mark talks about from DNA at dnabaits.com. If you just want to use the bait, they do the post-free deals and you get all sorts with it. Three key matching pellets or stick mix, tub of pop-ups, wafters, 250ml of bait soak, and which is probably the most people's introduction to liquids, is just dipping the boilers. There's a 5 kilo deal at $59.99, 10 kilo at $94.99, 20 kilo at $149.99, and a 50 kilo at £320. Get an extra 5% off all of those with the code CARPCAST5 at the checkout. What are the flavours, Mark? Have you got them?
Yeah, the flavours, the Secret 7, the Nutter S, SLK, Ocean X, and the recently launched Switch, which does seem to be tearing a few places apart right now.
Yeah, seems a very popular bait at the minute. When I was chatting with Rob Pughes, actually, he was talking about, how would you describe the Switch? Well, it's hard to describe. Like, it's kind of a high-protein, meaty, fishy, everything. But it seems to be doing really well.
Yeah. Do you know what a friend of mine described it as when he had a smell? It's a little bit I had.
Go on.
He said it smelled like a pork pie.
Ah, yeah, meaty.
Yeah, mate. I had a smell myself and I was just thinking, well, I don't want to be getting pork pies from where he's shopping, but as a fish bait, it's certainly doing the biz.
DNA do the Zig deal as well. It is Zig time of year at the minute, isn't it? It's definitely Zig time. We get 2.5 kilo of spod mix, bottle of sticky sweet liquid that everybody raves about, and Fox Zig aligners. It's only £30. It's post free, and again, you can get an extra 5% off that. Single hook bait time of year as well, a lot of people are using. They do the fluoro pop-up deal, 5 tubs for £25, again delivered free to your door, all at dnabaits.com. and don't forget to use the 5% discount code. And I shall be getting some bits and bats, I think. I really want to try that hydro wheat liquid, as you will, I'm sure, when you listen to this interview that's coming up. Going to be doing a new DNA feature as well. We know DNA Bates have been with us a hell of a long time. We've really thanked them for supporting the Carpcast. But we are aware that we say the same things week in, week out. So we've had a chat with some of the DNA consultants, and they've got some fantastic anglers that have all got something we can learn from. So I've had a chat and... they've got like England internationals, people like Mark Bartlett and stuff. So we're going to get a bait tip off each of them every week. So as part of the DNA advert, hopefully you should be learning something, or certainly I'll be learning something. So yeah, we hope to get a DNA consultant on each week. Just a little quick tip, to do with some, obviously it's going to be one of their products. That's the DNA bit. It's going to be a long show, this one with Rob and Mark, so I think we can save the top trumps, can't we, till next time.
Yeah, we can do. I mean, you mentioned learning something then. Are we just going to go straight into Holmesy? You've whet my appetite now. I want to listen.
Okay, let's get Holmesy on. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you.
Sorry I took so while answering, mate. I was looking for my bloody phone.
No worries.
And I had it on silent. I don't know about you, I put it on silent at night because I'm a technophobe, and my Facebook whenever anybody posts anything on it, it automatically lets me know via an email. Well, I wake up in the morning and I've got like 125 emails, and all I'll hear all night, if I don't put it on silent, is bing, bing, bing. The wonders of social media is that you realise all the people that are drunk at 2 o'clock and they're on Facebook.
there's an easy way to that. First of all, turn email notifications off.
You're going to tell me how to do it now, are you?
It's pretty easy. It's just in your settings on Facebook. I used to have my Hotmail account set up to Facebook, and it was the only thing I used Hotmail for, and I'd open Hotmail once in a blue moon, and it was 10,000 plus things, because it doesn't just give you a notification for, you know, something direct, it gives you a notification if somebody comments on that and if somebody else likes it, and all of a sudden you know thousands and thousands and thousands.
Well, what gets me is the, and I see people posting it, but because I'm like you, I'm quite, contrary to popular belief, I'm quite a nice fella. When people started posting me on these groups, added you to the group, I thought, oh, fine, fair enough. Well, it got ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, because the one thing that I've learned about Facebook is that you might have, I've got, you know, it's full now, so you've got these 5,000 friends, but what happens is you've probably got about maybe 1,000 that are active, probably less. And so I wonder why the rest are there on your friends as either a tool to add their promos to your page, which I don't allow, or to keep an eye on what you're doing.
Yeah, it's a funny old world, the social media.
Yeah. It is, but I mean, you know, it is what it is, Jamie, isn't it?
Yep, it's there as a tool, it's there to be used, like you're saying. You know, I'm starting to get a little bit of hate on the now people making up silly memes and pictures and stuff, and I see that as a really good thing, because if you've got into people's heads enough for them to you know, to spend time making a stupid picture or you know, photoshopping a picture of you or something like that, then you're kind of there, you know, you're a nobody until you started to receive the
hate. I often say this, mate, my old man always, I didn't learn much from my father, bless him, but he always said to me, always remember, son, no one kicks a dead dog.
Exactly. it's a bit of a Yorkshire way of Yorkshire analogy.
Oh, yeah.
I do like that one. But yeah, it's a funny old world, the Facebook. But once people start moaning, you know you've made your impression. You know, there's you've got an opinion.
I've actually learned, you know, it's one of those things. You take a while to get used to it, and then you understand what it is, and you have to either adapt with it or not go on it. You know, it's as simple as that, mate.
It really is.
And one of the things I always try to be, Jamie, is that, yeah, I'm getting on a bit and I've fished for a cat for a long time, but if you're not relative, mate, you shouldn't really be sticking your head above the parapet, should you? You've got to be relative to today.
Yeah, therein lies the problem. As soon as you put your head up there, you know, there's people that they get shown, you know, you show them their own insecurities by, you know, it's almost like you're a threat to them, and you know, and that's when they shoot you down. But like you say, if you don't put your head up there, you don't get it. If you do put your head up there, you've got to have thick skin, because, you know, someone's gonna have a pop. And like you say, if you do put your head up, then you've got to have something worth saying as well, I think.
Well, they've all got the thing where I remember something David Orr once said to me years ago, this between you and me, more money. And I had a meeting with him and Coulson, and Coulson said, oh, if we lose, we won't sell so many mags. And he said, can I just interrupt you? He said, fellas, we make the anglers. The anglers don't make themselves. And for a long time, editors in magazines and stuff, and owners of said magazines, had that power. The key shift to me now is some fucking numpty in his bedsit suddenly has a box to stand on now, Jamie. You know,
that's always been the case with social media. Like you say, everyone's kind of that they're almost equal, because everyone's on the same platform with the same voice. And but what you find is these people, they have no interaction on their own pages. They get their voice heard by posting on other people's pages, you know, or you know, like a contentious thread or something that's going on. You'll see them posting shit all the way through it, because nobody listens when they talk on their own. And
And I think as well, Jamie, is that I always say this, it's like anything that's thrown out to the masses, those that are good will do well, and those that are good will do average, and those that are shy will do shy, and ever was thus. You know, so don't beat yourself up about it. You know, end of the day, you know, the ones that are good at summer will end up near the top, and the ones that are so good will end up near the bottom, and it's called life.
this was quite a good intro, I think, and but I think there's a couple of bits I might have to chop now.
But
I think it would have been a nice one. I mean, what we've actually got you on to talk about is a little bit personal and a little bit selfish from me this year, because I've heard you speaking about liquids quite a bit. Our listeners love when we go deep on bait. They're just hungry for knowledge. You know, our most popular shows are the ones where we chat about. They want the technical stuff. They want to be a better angler. And I've been looking into liquids quite a lot. You've been speaking about liquids quite a lot. So I think it's a good time to get you to explain your thoughts.
To be fair, Jamie, I do get amazed, really. I did, as you know... I've been telling my technophobe, Johnny Bannister, bless him, with DNA, filmed the talk that I did at the Capping On Show, Rig and Bait Clinic, about 3 or 4 years ago, and I talked about salt and all the rest of it. And I'd written about salt and all the rest of it for years and years and years. But with these Rig and Bait Clinics, one of the things which I do like is they are interactive. So you've got your public right in your face. And when I've done, since then, slideshows for many, many years up and down the country, yeah, they have the same interaction, but it isn't the same because the guy's not stood in front of you. And this year, I did talks on the live show at the Northern Angling Show, and I also did talk at the Carping On Show. But I did on the Sunday, Carping On, the Rig and Bait Clinic. And whatever anybody tells you about these sort of, I call them Arthur Daly routines, where you literally turn up with your suitcase, you open it up, you start selling on the street corner. Well, that Rig and Bait Clinic is very much like that. You suffer from all kinds of things, and the first thing that you would suffer from is anybody going to turn up. And I've noticed over the weekend that there weren't that much traffic up there, and I was really worried. But when I did the talk on the Sunday about liquids and how to use them in a fishing situation, the lads will tell you it was absolutely rammed. I think Blessing Paul Monkman said there were about 65 people around, and that's good. But then you get the other side of the thing, because you're on a flat level and you have got your suitcase and people are listening and I give them liquids to have a smell of and all the rest of it, you realise that you can't reach enough people. So when you asked me to come on and talk about liquids, I was absolutely chuffed, because what I wanted to do was tell people a little bit about how they can apply it for the fishing. Because when you open the Pandora's box about liquids, the first thing people think is that, I always call it the matrix of carp fishing, and you have three things that you need for the matrix of carp fishing. Number one, you need an edge. Number two, you need to know how to apply it into a fishing situation. And number three, you need to keep it secret. Now, if you can get those three things, you will obtain the matrix of carp fishing, and that will allow you to get the best out of your water and the job sorted. And that's basically what people have to do. Now, the one that people will always struggle with, and I can't talk about it, and you've got to do it yourself, is keeping it secret. That is the hardest thing to do. And when I mean by that, I don't mean being secret squirrel. I mean, when you apply it on your water, if people are watching what you're doing, then it becomes quite difficult. So when I'm going to talk about, let's use last year as an example, the liquids that I used to get the success I did, one of the ways of using it were quite extreme. And people said to me, well, surely, Ormsey, why didn't you just simply spom out said liquid that I'm going to talk about, or why didn't you PVA bag said liquid that we're going to talk about? The reason why I didn't do that is that on busy syndicates, if you're pouring liquids into PVA bags, or if you're constantly spomming, then there'll be people walking past you and stuff, and when you start catching, they will, you know, it's in all of us. I'm as guilty as anybody. When people start catching, people wonder what they're doing. Even seasoned professional, top of the tree celebs, pin-up boys, whatever you want to talk, the great and good of carp fishing, where everybody says they're all human when you break it down. And when someone's doing particularly well, you wonder what he's doing. So that's the hard part, is the secret part, Jamie. But if you let me, bud, I'll talk to you a little bit about liquids as an edge, and then how I apply them. Will that do you, bud?
Yeah, so you're saying you don't want to tell us the application, you just can tell us what you're doing with it, you know.
No, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the liquids and why they're successful as an edge, and I'm going to tell you how to apply them. The one thing I can't do is how you keep it secret, because you know as well as I do, when I stood up and did my slideshow this year, as I said, the last 2 years of my fishing has been a wake-up call for me, because for 10 years before that, I'd been very, very lucky. I'd fished in Cambridgeshire and one or two other places, and I'd had I'd been in syndicates where there was maybe me and another guy on the lake.
Yeah.
So I was able to roam around and do what I want and all these sort of secret things without having to be ultra secret.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the last 2 years, I'm on a water which sees a lot of traffic, and I'm realising what it's like down at Sandhurst or Linear or Bluebell or Wyreside or anywhere up and down the country that's a day ticket walk with big fish. And then I realise that that in itself is an art form for fishing, how to keep it secret.
Oh, certainly.
But what the reason why the reason why I can't say too much about it, Jim, is you know as well as I do, but I get lads coming to say to me, saying, you know, how do we do this, Holmes? And I say, well, I can't tell you how you're going to keep it secret on your water because I don't know how many lads are fishing it. I don't know the problems you've got and all the rest of it. So that secret one is very much an individual thing, Jim.
I've never had anything advanced enough to have to keep secret. So I just did the basics.
I can't believe that. But listen, so we'll get down, we'll talk about liquids then. If you think about it realistically, why liquids? Well, I say to people, from a bait point of view, there are three things that are attractive to carp. Number one, a boilie. Now, number one, a boilie, it tended to be, historically, a sealed unit. So when it ate it, it ain't got the goodness. But the leakage off it at times was quite poor. So they did things like put oil in it and glugs and stuff like that and various kind of things. That's the least attractive of the three things I'm going to talk about. The second one, which is quite attractive, is paste, because it's not been boiled, so the attraction is not sealed. So you'll have, like on EVOs, things that are in EVOs, you'll have a wrap around, and putting paste wraps around boilies has been around for years and years and years. But paste itself can be an absolutely fantastic attractor, and it's far more attractive than a boilie. And the third one is liquid. Now, liquid really is the diamond in the rough, because they're on that straight away. So what happens is, when I think about liquids, what I had to do this year is people realise that liquids are instant almost for attraction of fish. And all of the edges that I've tried to do these last sort of 15, 20 years have been about slowing the process by which we have to wait for a bite. Because our sport is probably the only branch of the sport where 95% of the time we're inactive and 5% of the time we're in. So I once likened it to camping with a bit of fishing thrown in. Well, if you can now think about it, where lad's got the young family, his missus lets him go every other weekend, he's not got a lot of money, he's not got a lot of bait, and he's on a day ticket water where all the other lads are in the same and they're very competitive. He's not got time to be pitching up and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. So he really needs, what will make him a better angler is something that's almost instant. So all these little edges and things that I've done are to try and take away the time factor so that it appeals more to grassroots. You know, I caught that very sought after caravan park line. I caught it twice in a week, Jamie. And people said to me, Holmesy, why didn't you make a big thing about that? Why didn't you split it all over? And I write about this when my book comes out. But the reason why is because the way I caught it is not applicable to 90% of anglers, Jamie. So when I would stand up on the stage, other than showing people I physically caught it, to talk about it would be non-relevant to people. And one of the things I'm always trying to do with my fishing these days is make it relevant so that a guy can look at me and think, you know what? I like him. I don't like him. I'm not fussed either way. But I like what the guy says because I can use some of his edges. And that's what I try and do. And I think that's why people want me to come back and keep doing talks, not because they think I'm marvellous and wonderful and they love me. I hope some of them do. But I think it's because they can pick up edges for the fishing. So I'll go back to the liquids. So what I wanted is, I'd seen people spotting out sloppy spot mix and all the rest of it. And without a shadow of a doubt, you can tell by the results that fish will come up in the water. And you're kind of just old enough to remember, Jamie, when we started on the float fishing,
yeah,
where it basically was brown and white breadcrumb.
Yeah.
And what would happen is, dependent upon where you wanted the attraction to be, would be how much water or lake water you put in your mix. So a classic example, if you're fishing for the bigger fish, like tench and a big roach at the time, I would use quite stodgy ground bait, and I would put my maggots in the middle with a little hole and everything, so it went down like a stone.
Yeah.
And then when I was fishing for roach and rudd, I would put more lake water in my white ground bait, and I would throw it in the lake, and it would make a cloud, and I'd spray maggots about. So we've all kind of grown up with changing the density and viscosity of anything in order to attract fish, and that's the key word that I want people to get in their head for the next 5 minutes: density and viscosity. Right. So what did I want? I'd got some liquids off Steve Carey at DNA, and bless him, he gave me this particular liquid, and I had a massive dumpful, and I put it in my garage, and I thought all about it. And after about 2 months, I went back in the garage, and it smelled like a brewery. And I thought, oh, hang on a minute here. Has my son been having a quick snifter of lager in here and not telling me? So I opened the bucket, and all I can say is that this product, this Hydroworld product, which basically is wheat steeped liquor.
Yeah.
When people talk about CSL, this product that I used is basically the same principle as steeped liquor, but instead it was wheat.
Yeah.
And you can do it with barley, and you can, you know, so the actual attraction of CSL, which everybody knows is a massive fish attractor and knows it's particularly good with commons, is not the fact that it's corn, it's the fact that it's steeped liquor.
Yeah.
So that's the key thing anglers should learn about liquid. Two things attract the fish, and particularly Cyprinid family. And this survey was done on catfish, and it was basically salt and alcohol. Those are the two biggest attractors to fish. Now, this morning, I'm not going to talk about salt. We'll put that in the drawer. We've done it to death, all the rest of it. But I want to talk about alcohol. So alcohol is a massive attractor of fish, right? So when I stood up at Capping On 4 years ago, and I think it's a YouTube video, and I said, look, quick little tip for you. If you've got no time, you've got no money, and you go into Linear Complex, get some vodka, make a little dip, soak your hook baits in it, off you go. And the lads ringing me up, oh, I'm there, fantastic. Is it Smirnoff I've got to use? And it's it kind of got lost there. But the reality was, it was the simple fact that it was the alcohol in there. So when I got these two products from Steve, and this particular thing, when I opened the top, the reason why it smelled like a brewery was because it's inherently full of sugar. The sugar very quickly turns to alcohol. And that's when you get EAT involved.
Yeah.
So I opened this top, and it was like, all I can say to you, it was like, it had gone solid. So I got a carving knife, and I carved it off, and it was like honeycomb. If you can imagine crunching,
yeah.
It was like honeycomb. So I shot down to the lake, I thought, this will be brilliant. Threw it in the water, and it dissolved instantly, almost like a Alka-Seltzer tablet or Oberon. It dissolved instantly. And what happened was, within 30 seconds, all the fish came on the surface, and they're like, oh, now here's the problem. I don't want to catch carp on the surface. I want to catch them on the deck.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why I don't want to catch them on the surface. A, catching them on the surface is a far harder job to do with conventional carp tactics. It's best served if you have a few hours to do surface fishing. When you are traveling to a syndicate that's in a lot of action and you're there for 2 nights, Basically, Mark Holmes' fishing is about catching them on the deck. So that basically means I don't want the leakage of liquids from the top to the bottom. I want the leakage of liquids from the bottom to the top. Now, here's the first thing. Holmes, you're talking crap, because basically, if you put liquid in that leaks from the top to the bottom, it's never going to reach the bottom.
No,
because as it starts to come down, that's it, depending upon the depth of your water. But let's say you're fishing 8 foot. Basically, you'll be lucky if that liquid comes down to 4 foot, and it will dissipate in the water. Now, here's the trick. Dependent upon the viscosity of that liquid, you can change the leakage from top to bottom to bottom to top. Now, here's how I stumbled on this. 35 years ago, I was fishing a place called Shelladine in Yorkshire, and we were catching carp on bread crust. And my mate was having real problems casting. He was a bit heavy-handed, and we used to dunk the bread crust in the water for added weight, and we'd cast it. And if he didn't pull his hook out, invariably what would happen is the smaller fish would break down the crust, and the hook would fall out. What I did was I dipped my crust in Tate & Lyle's golden syrup. I thought, this will do. Fantastic. A, I've got the added weight.
Yeah.
And B, it's almost like a binder that's stopping the bread break down. Fantastic, marvellous.
Yeah, good idea.
Cast it out. Yeah, cast it out. This is great, marvellous. Oh, I've caught a fish. Oh, I've caught another one. Fantastic, this. Big fish comes short, where that was the days when I could see. Big fish came short. Oh, I'll cast to that. Dips in the treacle. Off it goes. Big fish on the surface, going towards the crust, all of a sudden, starts going down. And I'm like, what? And then I actually did it in the edge. And what was happening, Jamie, was the globules of treacle were falling from the crust down through the water and down to the bottom.
Yeah.
And what was happening was the carp was following these globules down. So the one thing that I realised is that if you make the viscosity, which is the thickness of a liquid, a certain way, it will drop like a stone and it will leak from the bottom to the top.
Yeah.
Now, can you see the light bulb going on?
Yeah.
When you actually put... So here we go. So let's talk about reality. So this hydroweed that Steve gave me was absolutely fantastic because it sank like a stone. And when I did the tank examples for the people at Carping On show and the Northern Angling show this year, soon as people saw it come out of the bottle, they were amazed. And here's a little tip for you. Get the hydroweed, get a tank of clear water, or even a big pint glass, and pour it in there, and this is the clue. What type of liquid can go down like a stone and not change the colour of the water? Now, that tells you that you are getting the viscosity right, because you think about it, it's got to travel through the water, hit the bottom of the deck, and it's not changing the colour of the water going down. Now, that basically tells me that it's going down like a sealed unit,
yeah,
and the leakage is very slow.
Yeah.
So when I actually tumbled this, what I then started doing, and I've been doing for years, is changing the viscosity of my liquids. Now then, I stood up on stage years ago and I said, boilers, you need to keep thinking about the next new thing. And what I'm going to talk to you about is I'm going to talk to you about viscosity, density and addiction. Don't want to talk about addiction today, but viscosity and density are enormous when it comes to liquid. Now then, this is how most people use liquids in today's carp fishing. They basically use them as a glug. They basically will use them to try and soak as much liquid into their boiler as they possibly can.
Mm.
Now the problem with that is that if you do not control the leakage in the pond, here's what happens. And I don't know you're fishing, but you listen to this, Jamie, and I bet you'll be thinking, cracky, that makes sense. Bloke turns up Friday night, 5 kilos of bait. He puts 4.5 kilos out over 3 rods. Saturday morning, fish rolling all over him. Oh, yes, we're in here, mate. We're in. Side at rods. Oh, I'm in any time. Gets nothing. When he's packing up Sunday, he gets a bite. Jesus, I'm in. Now then, this is what's happening. Basically, the leakage when he puts the boilies in is right to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So the fish follow from the bottom to the top.
Yeah.
So the fish are on the surface. They're following it to the end of where it goes. They can't see 8 foot down.
Yeah.
And it's all right, people saying, well, they'll follow it down. Nonsense. Because if that's still leaking, it's coming to the top. Now then, as a day and a half wears off and the leakage rate gets lower and lower, the carp come down. Carp comes to about 1.5 feet down on Sunday morning. Oh, there's a bait down here. Oh, I'm in.
Yeah.
Now then, can you see that analogy? Now, there's two ways you can get rid of that. One is by changing the liquid that you put into the boiler. And two is by realising that we've lost the principle of drawing fish in. And that's the old little and often theory. And one of the things about using liquid, which I'm going to tell you about, is in order to do it successful, you have to bait up little and often.
Yeah, totally agree.
And that means you can actually get the fish into such a frenzy. So basically, what I did with this hydroweed is it went down like a stone. So it went down like treacle, so it went straight down. Now, when I used it, it was fantastic for another thing. It was, when people talk to me about, I can't get any bait in the water because the fish, the birds are mullering me. If you use liquids as an attractor on the bottom, you'll get birds diving down 2 or 3 times, nothing, and then they'll bugger off to mate it down the pond.
Yeah.
Because when they're diving down because there's a splash and all the rest of it, but when they go down there, there's no for them.
Yeah.
Because they're not like fish, they're looking for solid objects.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why the liquids work so well on fish is because, again, they get the food signals. They get turned on by the food signals, yeah. But there's nothing there for them.
This is my theory on it, Jamie. Here's one from Holmes's own made tip. Right, listen to all this, lads. Get some glycerine. Buy some glycerine. You can buy it anywhere. Get some liquid glycerine. And all it is glycerine. Is it's used in the food industry. It's used in the farm industry. It's used wherever as a thickening agent. But buy glycerine, and I showed the guys this when I did this talk. Then go into your mother's fridge or your wife's fridge or whoever, your own fridge, and get some lemon juice or some orange juice or strawberry juice or whatever. I actually get the lemon juice that you can buy in the yellow squeezy bottle.
Yeah.
Put a little bit of glycerine in a tub and squeeze some lemon juice in there and mix it up with a spoon. You have just created an ester.
Hmm.
And an ester is the best hook bait dip bar none. Now, what is an ester? I'll tell you what an ester is, Jamie, and I'm going to get a little bit scientific. An ester is where alcohol and acid mix.
Yeah.
And the chemical reaction of that creates an ester. Now, an ester creates the biggest key change shift in the pH in the water column that I found. Now, this is why I believe that single IVs hook baits work.
Yeah.
Because, principally, they're a fruit flavour.
Yeah.
So they're pineapple or strawberry or orange, which has traces of citric acid in.
Yeah.
They are actually glugged, most of them are glugged with a glycerine base. Now, within glycerine is traces of alcohol. So you've got alcohol and the acid from the fruit, the citric acid, and that's creating an ester. That creates a pH shift, and this is how I believe the carp spot them. They are, these shifts in the water column is what carp home in on. Now then, this is why they will only work as hook baits.
Yeah.
If you put 10 IVs baits around that were soaked in the stuff that they come in, a carp wouldn't like them. They'd eat three or four, and then they'd be off on them. But one is perfect because they've got to inspect it.
Yeah.
But try that homemade dip. So to answer your question, when you said, does it trigger their senses? Without a shadow of a doubt. But how they trigger it is, I think liquids create a pH shift in the water column. And this is why they work universally. Because whatever your pH is in your water, if you throw something in that changes, it allows them to home in on it quickly.
Okay.
And so that's why I think liquids work.
I've spoke about this a couple of times before on here. I do want to get into liquids for beginners, what sort of things do what, you know, what can we look for, which types of oils are heavier, lighter and stuff. I want to go into all that, but I told a story once about pouring some melted vanilla ice cream into the water with the carp. Now, I don't know if you've ever poured, like, I remember we used to put carnation milk in our spod mix years ago to make that cloud in the water. I did it with ice cream that just melted, put it in, the carp went crazy. I was on a bridge watching, you know, these tame carp underneath, and they went mental in this cloud, and there was no food, and it seemed to frustrate them but make them even more hyper, because there was nothing there for them to eat. They were just like pushing each other out of the way in the middle of this cloud of liquid. Now, obviously, that's vanilla ice cream, which is just basically milk and vanilla pods. I don't know if there's any pH thing going on there. It was the physicality of the cloud of course, milk.
Of course it gains a pH, but you've stumbled on to the most important thing, is that when any wild animal is stimulated to feed, like a fish is, and there is nothing there for it to eat, it gets agitated.
Yeah.
And that agitation means that your upbeat is going to get taken quickly. And this goes back to what I said earlier about these systems working so you get a quick bite. I never forget, one of the things which I do think, you know what, two fingers up to the people who give me stick. How many guys have had consecutive front covers on Carp Talk? And I did get a buzz out of that, because Crowey put a 49-pounder that I caught on the front cover, and I rang him up and I said, but Simon, you're going to have to put me on the front cover with a 60 next week. And we were laughing and joking. He said, look, he said, I know you're going to catch it. He said, but you know what? You know, how can you be sure? I said, you watch. Following the art, I caught said 60 because I was up a tree and I was watching said 60 banging this drum, trying to get the liquid out and going crazy because there was no bait for it to eat.
Yeah.
And that's what liquids can do. Irrespective of the size of fish, if you get the liquids correct, then basically you will catch big fish. And so this is what most of my attackers has been. And you've got to be very clear with what you want to do with liquids. And this glugging thing, which I spoke about, and the leakage rate is fine, but there is no advantage in it now because everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
And this is the thing with most of my fishing and most of what I want to try and tell people. Edges that everybody use are no longer an edge.
Yeah.
So what I wanted was a way to get the liquid down onto the deck for able to catch these fish. And when you actually talk about using liquids correctly, unless you have access to a rowing boat, or to a lesser extent a bait boat, then you have to think ways around it. And the syndicate water that I fish deepens, he does not allow a rowing boat and he doesn't allow remote control boats. So one thing which I always say to people is, if you've got an option of catching carp short, medium or long, do it in that order. Try and catch them short first, try and catch them medium second, and if you've got to go long, go long.
Yeah.
Simply because your ability to control the baiting up situation is far easier the shorter the fish are. So what I had to think of was, I knew I wanted to create new spots to catch these fish on, and so I wanted to create them that were in manageable distances. And so one was 40 yards and one was 10 yards where I had to apply the liquids. The one that was 10 yards, I actually cast 90 yards to that spot, but in order to do what I did undercover so people couldn't see me, I was fishing. The liquid was being applied 10 yards out under a tree,
yeah.
But people couldn't see that. So once I'd found this particular liquid that worked, I then had to devise a way of actually applying it. And the simple way I applied it was by the old principle of a large swim feeder. Those old enough to remember when swim feeders first came out, one of the first ones was that we used for catching big fish was the Drennan feeder, which was like an old woman's curler. It was green, and it had two swan shot or three swan shot on the bottom and stiff nylon through the middle of it. And I remember people used to get a lot of false bites with it, and then suddenly people started using shorter traces and getting bites. So all that was, I've used swim feeders a lot for carp fishing. I've used swim feeders to actually catch big carp by using 3-foot traces. So you get a hot spot of food and the big ones will stay away from it. But if you're going in new with the system, they will home in on the main source of attraction, which is said swim feeder. Mm-hmm. When suddenly people realised this, they went shorter and shorter with their upbaits, till in the end the method was born, which was actually, you know what, instead of having a trace, why don't I just simply put my upbait right in the middle of this attraction?
Yeah.
Which is, if you think about it, Jamie, is just the method.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do was have a way that I could apply liquids and I could have applied my bait as well. Now what I wanted was, I didn't want someone to follow me in and catch on my bait. And that's another great advantage about liquids. Liquids allow you to fool the birds and they also allow you to fool the anglers. So if you're known as a guy who puts a lot of bait in and matey moves in after you, he's not fishing on your bait because it's gone. It's liquid, it's gone. So basically, I came up with two ways. One was a large 5-litre can, which was peppered with holes, and I simply handballed that out, fastened it to some baling string nailed to this tree, and the liquid would come out slowly. And that's the one that I saw the big fish knocking into. And dependent upon the activity of the big fish, it would rise to the top accordingly. So I could get that to leak out slowly for about 6 to 8 hours, and then I would have to replace it. For me, 40-yard fishing, where I had to cast out, I actually came up with a small Coke bottle, and I filled that full of liquid. And I've written about this, and I've shown this, and basically, that's got, it's a coke bottle that's got a hole in the top, it's got a rubber grommet in there, it's got a wire loop on the top, it's peppered with holes, and when you actually make the holes, get a nail and make it so it's orange, so it's actually, it's really hot, and that actually melts the plastic. Don't just punch a hole, because if you punch a hole in a small coke bottle, it will start to split. So if you do it properly with the nail that's been heated, you will actually seal it. So it was like a swim feeder, and I cast that out on a 6-foot boat rod with 85-pound braid, and I had it under the lake itself, so people didn't know that it was there. And that would leak from about 4 to 6 hours. And the great thing was, is when most of the liquid had come out, it would pop to the top with the coke bottle, and I knew it was time to top it up. So the great thing about this system as well was it made sure that I got back into what I call my proper angling tactics, which was little and often feeding. And what I then did as well, Jamie, I then actually cemented this by using a boilie that would break down in 12 hours. And the way you can do that is, a little tip for you guys, is get some of the hydro wheat, use a third hydro wheat, use a third lake water, not tap water, use a third lake water, and use a third, I shouldn't really tell you this because it's a little edge, but sod it, seeing as I'm giving edges away, a third marvel or 5 pints mixed into a liquid. Mix those three things together, soak your boilies in it for about 12 to 18 hours, take your boilies out, let them dry, and then use them. They will break down in about 10 to 14 hours.
What makes them break down in that mix then? How does that work?
Well, what it does is it actually makes it first of all, it makes them softer, and basically it starts to work within certain of these, right. Here's one that I can't say too much about because I'm still working on it, and all the bait buffs out there will know the problems that anybody who's working on this will think. The ultimate in carp fishing is enzymes. Mm. And basically an enzyme will start to work and eat the boilie. I don't mean with an H, I mean with an E.
Yeah.
It eats the stuff inside and it breaks it down to a mush. And lots of great and good of carp fishing bait development have tried to do that. But the only problem with it is that most enzymes are controlled by temperature.
Yeah.
So unless you have a stable temperature, you cannot control their breakdown rate. So one day it could be 4 hours, one day it could be 8 hours, and one day it could be an hour. You know, you can't control that. What I managed to do with this particular mix was the enzymes which I was creating were actually breaking down the parts of the boiler that I was using very quickly, within 8 to 12 hours. So basically, why is it breaking down? It's the enzymes in there that are working on it.
Yeah.
But you see, this is the key. Because you were soaking it in that liquid away from the lake, you had a constant temperature.
Yeah.
Soon as that goes in the lake, temperature drops, and that then means that the temperature that the enzymes had not been activating and had allowed to go in and permeate the bait, suddenly different temperature, different reaction.
Wow.
Now, I know I'm not a scientist, and you'll get some guy absolutely ripping holes in that. They'll say, well, hold on a minute, Holmesy. How do you know what the temperature was in the place where you were soaking the bits? Yeah, I can do that. But how do you know what the temperature was at the bottom of the lake? Here's one for you, Jamie. For 15 years, every time I went fishing, I used to cast a temperature thermometer out.
Yeah.
Little silver thermometer, out it goes. And I used to take temperatures. Do you know what I learnt, Jamie?
The bottom is always the same temperature.
I learnt fuck all.
Oh, right.
Because what I learnt, Jamie, was that I was having a thrombosis trying to make any analogy that made sense. Now, what does make sense with all of these weird and wonderful things that I've come up with, Jamie, and this is why I always say to people, judge it on your indicator activity.
Yeah.
If all these weird and wonderful things that Mark Holmes goes on about and people have a pop at me, why does the old git still keep catching these big fish?
Yeah.
You know, we can all get lucky, Jamie. You know, we can all fish privileged water, or you've got this, or you can have access to that, or you can have access to that. This year is my 41st year of fishing for them.
Yeah.
You know some of my history, mate. Everywhere I've gone, I've caught them. There's got to be a reason for that, isn't there?
Yeah.
You can't get continuous looking. And so if these edges don't work, I actually challenged people this year. I said, right, if these edges don't work, why are these things, why do I stand up every other year with another batch full of big fish?
Yeah.
It's because you've got to be different. And if you're doing something different, you might not always be getting the conclusion that you want, but you'll be getting the results that you want. And all I ever try and do to people is prod them to think outside the box, because thinking outside the box ultimately is what will get you more bias. And I'm going to say this, and I'll get one or two people having a knock at me, but isn't it amazing, Jamie, that along with DNA baits, we come up with these weird and wonderful things to do with hook baits, and suddenly, 2-3 years down the line, lots of the trade are now coming up with ideas for the hook baits. And I have a churlish smile on my face and think, you know what? I must be doing something right.
So let's try and bring this back to something. You know, when you're talking about hydro wheat and stuff like that, people are just like, "Oh, what's that? Where do I get it? You know, how can I use that? Is it something?" I mean, how does somebody go around? But let's go back to the liquid. So you're getting a liquid and you're applying it either in large containers, separate to your rig, you drop it in the water or you adapted a coke bottle to be able to cast that in and leave it to leak out. Okay. So what exactly is in that mix that you're putting out?
Well, basically it is steep liquor. It's predominantly sugar.
Yeah.
And remember what I said about 15 minutes ago? Be focused on 2 fish attractors.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Be focused on 2 fish attractors. 1, salt. We've put that away for bed. 2, alcohol. What I'm talking about here, and alcohol, you can break down into various sectors. And a huge sector of alcohol is sugar.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, when sugar comes under heat, it breaks down and it reacts into alcohol.
Yes, the fermenting period.
And I said this nearly 8-9 years ago, that I wanted to focus my bait attention coming away from fish, krill and tuna and squid and all these well-known attractors of fish, to come away from there and try to get the fish back attracted to sweet baits. Because when I started, we used to add intense sweetener and we used to go down the sweet route. The current trend for the last 10 years is to come away from all that and is to come on to savoury and fishy. So when all the masses were doing that, I thought there's got to be an edge in coming back to the sweet stuff. And you will now, I hope the light bulb is flickering a little bit, maybe why my vanilla ice cream was doing so well was because it was riddled with sugar.
Yeah.
And if that sugar is starting to react on that ice cream because there's no ice, there's no heat, suddenly something starts melting because it's warmer. When sugar gets warmer, Jamie, boom, bang, 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 we're going to get alcohol soon. Put it in the pond, woof, all these fish around it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you imagine if you had that as a scenario on the bottom of the lake and you put half a dozen freebies around that. What I found when using liquids was that heavy baiting of boilies is not needed, and in actual fact works against you.
Yeah.
Because if you do it correctly, all you're doing is simply making the odds longer before you get your bite. Because you're perfectly right, they're not hard to catch because they're in there looking for something to eat, because the attraction of the liquid brought them in, it's got their senses all prickled and ready, and off we go. Now then, let's talk turkey. 2 types of liquid, natural and chemical.
Yeah.
Both work, Jamie, don't get me wrong, both work. Natural, no problems.
Mm.
Chemical, be careful. I liken this, and you'll laugh at this, You win the lottery, you get such a high, it's marvellous and wonderful. You take some recreational drugs, you get such a high, but the following day you're falling about.
Yeah.
That's the difference between chemicals and naturals.
Yeah.
Natural is something that you can't overload. Chemical is something that you've got to be careful. Now, what is the old git saying now that's relevant to my fishing? What it basically means is that beware of liquids that you understand how they've been made. And this is why I do a lot of bespoke things. One of the things when Stevie Carey gave me this liquid was I was absolutely, before I did anything in a fishing situation, I said, Steve, can you be absolutely certain you can get the supply of this constant from the same spot. And he said, oh, he said, I've got about 5,000 litres of this, and I've got another 200,000 litres going. As soon as I heard that, I thought, that's fine, and I'll tell you for why. If you're experimenting with liquids or baits or any additives or anything, make sure that you can secure the supply of where you're getting it from, because when you go wrong, you can go back to the start point, and that's a fixed point.
Yeah.
And this is what I always used to tell people about CSL and even things like betaine. And I'm going to talk about betaine as a liquid in a second. Because it can be cut, it can come from a different source, it basically means that the strength rates can change. And I'll give you a classic. I'm very fortunate that a lot of my testing 8-9 years ago was at Lakeview, and I could put liquids into the lake and I could watch these fish. And what I would find when you put certain chemicals in the water is fish would come, and they'd come from a distance. So if you imagine a fish swimming from a distance, and it would go attract, 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 ooh, look, attract, 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 get close to the bait, ooh, repel, 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 and off it'd go.
Yeah.
Now that's because the leakage and the amount of chemical in there would attract them from distance, but when they got too near, oof,
too strong.
Can't be doing with that.
Yep.
Too strong. Now then, natural, you can't overdo it. Chemical, you can. And I'll give you a classic example. Betaine, we hear lots of people talking about betaines, dipping their zig bugs in betaine and making it as an additive and all the rest of it. And it's marvellous and wonderful. And all betaine is, DMA, is basically something that they give to animals. It's in the animal food chain. Something that they give to animals to stop them getting indigestion, or to stop them getting colic, or things like this, where animals will just eat and eat and eat. And if you're not careful, I'm thinking of cows and horses, if you're not careful, they will get indigestion. Betaine, which is just in its natural form, is a derivative of sugar beet. Basically, what that does is that's like Alka-Seltzer, or it's something that stops them getting indigestion. So that's historically where it comes from. Liquid betaine, the actual natural state, is fantastic. Most of the little bottles that you get off the shelf would be chemical ones. Mm. With them, you've got to be very sure that you get the additions right in your bait, because if you don't do it right, now then, so how is it that the little ones in the glass bottles attract fish? Well, they attract fish because a lot of them are cut with glycerine. You know the thing I was telling you about, the thick globulated stuff? Well, a lot of the betaine is actually mixed with that. So again, it's cutting it. Now then, imagine if you had a betaine that was natural and would attract fish without worrying about that. That again is a product that I used, and that was fine, but it would bring fish up in the waters. And you can buy that. I think DNA do this Peter Stim. That's natural. Or if you can get natural betaine, that's what you want to source. And the one thing I would say about liquids is that if you're unsure, go down the natural route.
Yeah.
So the natural route is to either do it yourself or to go down the sugars route and all the rest of it. Once you then get a bit more understanding, then you can start tinkering with chemicals that promote amino acids and all the rest of it. And I'll give you a little example that I spoke about a while ago. There's a compound called DPMT. And DPMT was developed by Japanese fishermen to help Thai fishermen for shrimp and prawns, because the Thai guys would go out with their nets for prawns, and their prawn fields, or whatever they're called, had been depleted.
Yeah.
Mr. Brainbox in Japan came up with a chemical, DPMT, that if you introduced it into the fields of the barren Thai prawn fields or whatever they were, suddenly all crustaceans were attracted there.
Mm.
They were attracted to this chemical. Now then, you think of the scenario. Once I'd heard this, I thought, hang on a minute, if crustaceans are going to be attracted by this chemical, then surely it would work with fish.
Yeah.
Oh yes, it works with fish. And people will be listening to this who know this product saying, oh, Holmes, are you giving another one? You're telling him again about this secret. Here's what I'm not going to tell you. Very much like fenugreek, very much like spirulina, when these things first came out, oh, fantastic, fantastic. What people won't tell you, and this is where bait companies now, we're forcing bait companies to list their ingredients. They're not giving the secrets away, because the real secret is the inclusion rates.
Yeah.
And the one thing I'll say to people about DPMT is it is a minute, the minute inclusion rates. Mm. And that's the key to it. Now, that is where you have to be. Specialised gear, specialised this, specialised that. And lots of people don't have the time, the energy or whatever to do that. So that's when I tell them to go down the natural route. And most liquids, you will find that there is a natural route, hence your vanilla ice cream, Jamie. Yeah.
So are DNA going to be releasing some of these liquids you've been talking about? Are they going to do like a,
well,
like
unfortunately,
a wheat stem? Or...
Yeah, unfortunately, they're already released. And one of the things which, you know, yeah, I'm associated with DNA, but I don't own DNA. I've got absolutely no share in that company at all. I'm involved with them because I trust them. I trust Steve Kelly, I trust Jason Thorpe, that they will always tell me exactly what's happening, tell me where it's coming from, and I can fail or succeed knowing exactly where my start point is. They don't, you know, it's not, this isn't a promo for DNA baits, but the one thing I would say is that any bait company that's worth, no pun intended, worth its salt, they will be able to help you when you say, can you do this for me, can you do that for me, can you do this for me, can you do that for me, provided you give them something back.
Yeah.
And what that has to be is some knowledge to help them produce something for the masses that they can work in a factory situation and make money out of it. And I'm old enough and ugly enough to know that you get nothing for nothing in this world. One of the things which always amazes me is that some lads who catch big fish just automatically assume that that is ultimately what will work in their favour with the bait company.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you that bait companies like failure as well as success.
Yeah.
because if you do not tell them of the failures, then they have nothing there to make that measurement. And that's the one thing that I'm very, very lucky at with DNA. I work with the guys, and I'm able to come up with ideas, and they're able to say, yeah, well, that's that, we can do that, we can't do this, we can do that, we can't do this. And the only thing I would say, Jamie, is that all of my idiosyncrasies are down to one end and one end only, catching carp, mate. I don't want to get labelled as a scientist. I don't want to get labelled as a bait buff. Only reason why I do it is because at this moment in time it's an edge.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think people are seeing this as an advert. People are just interested now in where they can get some of this stuff from. So I'm on the date.
But you can. Go on. You can. If I'll give you an example, then here's one for you. You can buy liquid betaine. If you get the liquid betaine, you will see that it is very much like runny gravy.
Yeah.
So you'll think to yourself, well, how can I get that on the bottom of the lake? That's where you've got to think outside the box, because any liquid in anywhere in the world, you can make thicker.
Yeah.
But as you're making it thicker, you are taking something away from the original liquid. And the one thing I'd say to you is, and all the mothers and all the cooks and chefs will know this, if you add heat to sugars, it starts to thicken.
Yeah.
And there's the big key. There's the big key, and it also shrinks.
Yeah.
So if you can have something that starts off simple, you've cooked loads of spag balls, I bet, yeah. Jamie, and you'll get the stuff, the dalmia stuff, and you put it on, and you put your mincemeat in, and you'll be stirring it, and you'll be thinking, oh, I've overdone this, it's too watery, is this liquid.
Yeah.
Suddenly, after about 5 minutes of a gentle heat, starts to thicken.
Yeah.
And that's why, suddenly, there's no sugar in Dalmio's bolognese. Yeah. Turn and look at the ingredients.
Yeah, it's full of it.
it's full of it, because what people tend to do is they tend to put sugar because it allows them to use a liquid that's viscosity is not so thick. And why is that? Because that makes it so much easier from a factory point of view, Jamie.
Yeah, Yeah, I agree. I didn't realise how many liquids DNA do. I'm looking on the website now. You're right, they do. They do this hydro wheat in a decent sized container. So let's say I'm going to go home now. I'm going to take in all this info you've just done. I'm going to go and make myself a liquid to use. Right. So I get on the DNA website. I buy this hydro wheat. I have a look at a couple of the other liquids. I think, oh, the hot hemp looks nice. There's some. There's some treacle in here as well, some molasses.
Well, can I give the listeners one last tip that's not a promo, that's an homemade tick liquid that's an absolute belter?
Yep.
Right. I used to use peanuts when I was a kid. Always used peanuts, and they got banned all over the place. Oh, they cause this, they cause that, and it's a nonsense. It's a human grade. They don't do it wrong. But anyway, so I thought, fine. Right, get some peanuts, boil your peanuts, and let them stand for about 2 weeks.
Yep.
Press them down, force them down with the end of a mallet or something like that, and squeeze the peanuts and get all that juice out of it.
Yep.
Sieve that off, and put some molasses in. Put 2 tablespoons of molasses in there, and leave that with some heat.
Yep.
Now then, you can start to add powder to that, like sweet powder.
Yeah.
You know your vanilla ice cream?
Yeah.
Get some vanilla powder.
Okay.
Start adding that to your peanut mix, and you can control the thickness of it.
Yeah.
You can make it into something that is like treacle. You go fishing with it, come back to me and you in a year's time and say, you know what? It might be old, it might be ugly, it might be opinionated, but I caught some fish because of him.
I tell you what, molasses was the first liquid I ever used, probably 11 years old, and I read in probably Angling Times was the only paper that we used to get.
And what is molasses full of, Jamie?
Go on.
Sugar?
Yeah.
And what happens when you apply heat to sugar? What does it turn into?
Well, we used to boil our...
alcohol.
Yeah, we used to boil our hemp with molasses treacle, as I probably saw in one of the magazines at the time, most likely Angling Times. And that was the first liquid I used, you know, 11 years old, so 30-odd years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I've known ever since molasses is a fantastic ingredient and still never really delved. But I am going, you know, I've already been thinking about liquids this year. I'm not sure I'm going to go as crazy as, you know, putting barrels of it out there and leaving it.
If you think about it realistically, what it does is it's just another string.
Yeah.
You know, there's no such thing as a one club golfer. You know, he carries a lot of clubs for different conditions, and I always liken that to carp fishing. Don't be a one club golfer.
Yeah.
Don't be, I've got 48 hours, I'll put it all in and I'll wait for a chance.
Yeah.
Yes, you'll catch carp, but if you vary the game and you keep trying to think outside the box, then you'll catch the ones that people don't catch.
Yeah. Would you use this hydro wheat as a base and then add the other attractors to it?
The one thing about it is it is so adaptable. You can use it, as I said, you can use it to apply it for a fishing situation. And one of the things I liked about it was that, first of all, I would say never use it where there's an abundance of Canadian tomweed, because it will hang up like some horrible thing dangling down a Christmas tree.
Right.
You don't want that. Basically, this is fantastic on top of silkweed, because it flattens the silkweed.
Mm.
It is fantastic on top of silt, and it is fantastic on top of gravel. And what it does, it's like cracking an egg in water.
Yeah.
Or cracking an egg on the floor. It actually expands once it's on the deck.
Yeah.
So it goes down in a lump, and then suddenly it expands outward. So you can very quickly build quite a spread of this, and then, again, tank tests. I ask people to do the tank tests, and you will see how it moves across the lake, and the leakage is so subtle and it's constant that you will pull fish in, so you don't need to use massive amounts of boilers. So that's in its raw state. You can use it, as I've said, to break down your boilers. You can use it as a glug. You can use it within as an ingredient within your baits. But I wouldn't want to say to people it's all singing and all dancing.
Mm.
It's just something which has a very high sugar content.
Yeah.
And as I said, I will round it up, Jamie, as I said, remember, get it in your swede. Two things that attract fish, salt and alcohol.
Yeah.
Don't salt to death, alcohol. And basically, the offshoot from alcohol is sugars. And that's ultimately where the key is. And the final thing is that if people have problems with this, they can Facebook you and you send me a question, or they can Facebook me, and I'll try honestly to answer them. I might not tell them, give me the answer that they want, because I'm not going to give all my edges away. But if people are having problems with this and they need any information, you know, and I can help them in any way, provided they're not fishing my waters, I'll help them, Gemma.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's a fantastic way to round this off. We've been exactly an hour, and I'm sure many people have got their minds blown. So I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the Carpcast.
All right, Gemma. Catch up with you soon, mate. You take care.
Big thank you to Holmesy. Don't forget, you can get all those liquids from dnabaits.com. Use the code CARPCAST5 and get your Coke bottles ready and sling them out in the middle of the lake. It's the only bit I'm not 100% sure of is the application of this liquid. I like the idea of like a swim feeder type thing, you know, like a closed swim feeder, and you can just drill little holes in it to put the attraction in the peg. I mean, back in the day, I spoke about this with Husey last night, actually. I mean, the original ways we used to use liquid were you use those, you use like the normal swim feeders with holes in, but you put a sponge in it and you completely soak the sponge in liquid and put that inside a swim feeder and out you go.
Do you remember those leads that we used to be able to buy, where they had that little groove for your band to go round?
That's
used
right.
To hold like a capsule either side for you to put liquids in.
Yeah, I do vaguely remember those.
Yeah, I never used them myself. I looked at it and just thought, we're a gimmick. But yeah. Obviously it's not.
Yeah, I like the idea of a sponge. You can get some pretty decent-sized swim feeders. I remember some of them. Just loads of holes in it, soak the liquid. I'm wondering, I mean, us bait boat users, this is nice and easy. You can get, do you remember for the old, what was the original bait boat, the original Angling Techniques one?
I know the one you mean.
They used to do...
bubble boat.
Yeah, they used to do like particle droppers. So the boat had like a long hopper, and you could put like, if you imagine imagine a fairy liquid bottle, the old ones that were kind of taller and thinner. Like imagine if you cut the top off one of those, and then it attached to the boat, so it made sure the particle dropped, because it didn't always drop sometimes out of those boats, because it was like at a 45 degree angle, and wet particles sometimes stuck to the side of it, didn't always drop. So they used to have like these washing up bottles, basically, that just rolled out the side, you know, dropped it through a hollow tube and dropped your particle and stuff. But imagine if you made one, a washing up bottle, cut the top off it and filled it with liquid, like a heavy liquid, like Mark says, so it sinks, and then just drop that somehow. Remember the Elsto spots they used to make on pit one that were basically had no holes in, they were like half like washing up bottles and stuff, weren't they?
What, Gardner pocket rockets?
Yeah, I wonder how you can plug it so it doesn't come out.
Yeah. Is it? You know where the first time I heard of liquids, you know, being applied to similar this was, I believe it was Dave Lane writing about winter fishing on Christchurch, just using PVA bags full of liquid and a hook bait.
Yeah, I mean, obviously quite a common way is the PVA bag, solid bags.
Is this Hydroweek gear PVA friendly?
I believe so.
Have I got to go back to this website? You're not going to get me to go back to the notes, are you?
No. It doesn't say, but yeah, it's certainly interesting. I mean, I think it is an edge for all the reasons we spoke about, and the fact that you're giving attraction without food, you know, so you're giving them the signals they want to feed, and there's nothing for them to eat bar your hook bait. So I can really see why it works. I'm going to have a mess about this year. Maybe we shouldn't have put this out publicly, because this, you know, the thing with edges, it's keeping them to yourself for a little while. But anyway, let's move on. We've got a new feature we're going to be doing the last show of every month. We've decided to have a CC IWOF, which is a Carpcast Internet Wall of Fame. I'll tell you why in a minute. But we're going to induct somebody today, I think, into the CC IWOF. And then we'll do it every month. Bit of fun. It could be somebody that's contributed something to fishing in some way. And it came because of a listener's question, which we will do in a minute. First of all, I think we talked to our friends at Carp Talk. Carp Talk are in partnership with us because we're supposed to release our show every Saturday, which is when their digital version comes out. Which only costs £1.49. It's available from pocketmags.com. You can view it on your PC, Apple Mac, iPhone, Android, pretty much all devices. It's only £1.49 from pocketmags.com, and you can get the printed version every Tuesday from your local stockist of magazines and stuff, of which there ain't many newsagents about anymore, is there? But there is a stockist locator on the Carp Talk website, or you can go into your newsagents and ask them to order it for you, and it will turn up. I mean, what's in there this week, Mark?
We have a great big carp from Euro Aqua, 101.5 pound for Warren Harrison, which is the second biggest carp ever caught by an Englishman.
Get this, you might not know this, but I was playing poker yesterday with one of his friends, He's had another one since then, another 100 pounder.
Wow. How big was that one? Or just
I'm not
a streak
sure.
of 100?
Yeah, I think they were both like 45 kilos or something, just over 100. But yeah, he's had a brace of 100 pounders. Which has obviously come out before up-to-date news. But yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous. We've done a show on Euro Aqua. We spoke about it a couple of times. It might not be for everybody, but I mean, it's impressive just to see how big carp can grow for one. And obviously Warren's he's had a few. Did he not have the brace in 90s last year? Was it 19 and 85 or something?
I don't know. I've got to be honest, I've not really been following Euro Aqua. Just, you know, seeing the odd monster pop up every now and then, but you can't fail to be impressed by a fish of 101.5 pound.
It's pretty large, yeah. What else is in there?
Right. I've got news of a Fish with the Stars event on the Mangrove, which is an exclusive syndicate run by Tim Paisley and home to some Shropshire's finest.
Yeah, it was a bit of one of those venues that was kind of dead man's shoes. Would you ever get a chance to fish it? I know they did a Birch Winter Syndicate, the Birch Grove. A few notable names have been on that over the years, Husey and Crowey and stuff. But the Mangrove Swamp is a very famous Shropshire venue. And you can obviously pay to fish with the stars there.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll probably be a charity event, so, you know, by Carp Talk and all will be revealed.
Yeah.
But they also visit a new five-star fishery in Lincolnshire, which opens in April. Already have 340-pounders swimming in it. And in the captures, a 52-pound, 5-ounce, very accurate there, 5-ounce,
yep.
Fish called the Germ from Frying In.
The Germ.
Germ
or Germ, I never know. I always see that fish. It's the biggest fish in Frying in Essex.
Yeah, it is a nice fish. But well, we've also got lumps from Acton, Christchurch Lake, St John's Pool, Yateley North Lake and Deepins. But I'm pretty sure this will be the same fish. But have you seen what's come out of the Yateley North Lake?
No, I haven't.
A 49-pound common.
Oh wow, I knew it had a couple of upper 40 commons in there. I think there's two of them. But I remember them stocking the North Lake, or restocking the North Lake, when I was on Yateley. So it's, what, 12 years ago? 12, 13 years ago? They drained down the North Lake, which was extremely interesting. I don't know if you've ever seen a lake drained down. But obviously, I'd never fished the North Lake, but it was extremely famous, home to Basil, amongst others. Well, Basil was kind of one of the most famous fish in the UK for a long time. Rob Malin's got a book called Basil's Bush, which is used to come off a bush that was kind of just up the path at the back of the Carp Heart Lake, full of history. And a very interesting shape lake, nooks and crannies, and, you know, it was a bit of a weird shape. It wasn't like a round lake or a rectangular lake or anything. There's like little arms and stuff. I remember seeing it drain down, and one thing that shocked everybody, I walked around it a couple of times, took pictures, I took a load of 360s just in case I ever fished it one day.
Yeah.
But there was a mound, like a pretty significant feature, that was maybe 8 foot high, 6 to 8 foot high. I'm doing this from 12 years memory now, but it was a pretty tall mound, and it was all house bricks. And I remember speaking to a few people that had fished it for years. I'm like, did you know that was there? And they were like, no, we had no idea it was house bricks. So can you imagine, if you imagine something that looks how would I describe it, just like a mini mountain, you're like a, you know, tall and round, like kind of like a pyramid at the base but rounded at the top. What would that have felt like, dragging a marker? I mean, obviously, you know it's a feature. If you land right on the top of it, it's 8 foot shallower than the water around it. So you know it's a pretty significant feature. But, like, pulling a marker over it, is it going to feel like rocks? Is it going to feel like really tappy? I mean, I'd be amazed if you caught off it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. But there's got to be a good chance of your lead snagging up between a couple of bricks and you're losing everything.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I wonder how many times we've dragged over house bricks and didn't even know. But it was, like I say, it was a pretty significant feature, and it gobsmacked everybody. Nobody knew. So, I mean, no matter how good you think you are with a marker float, I mean, how do you know what it actually is? I mean, what you're picturing in your head that you're feeling, is it actually that?
Yeah, I'm sure I've told you before about when I went for my little swim with a snorkel and mask around the Sunken Island and Terminator swims.
Yeah, remind me.
Yeah, the tractor wheel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not a tyre, a complete wheel.
Yeah, there's all sorts in there, cars and all sorts, aren't there?
Yeah, not to mention the, you know, the breakfast kitchen set, including plate rack and two stools.
Wow. Where was that?
That was just to the right of the Sunken Island swim on the bottom, and you could see the plate rack, you know, and there's like four or five rigs stuck to it as well.
Wow.
It also made me think, why the hell do we always try and sink our lines and pin them to the bottom when that's just the amount of crap down there? You might as well just say, here's some scissors, fish, cut me off.
Yeah.
Are we going to carry on with this carp talk now?
Certainly, yeah. I'd totally forgotten about the North Lake. But anyway, they once they drained it down, they did whatever they were doing with the fish. A couple of big ones that are on the missing list weren't found. I think it was the lads from Sparshot College that were doing all the work. So I went out there when they were netting the fish, because there was a couple of big ones that were on the missing list that they didn't know if they were still in there. So obviously everyone was really interested to see if these fish were there, and they weren't. I mean, once the water was drained down, they netted the small puddles. And then they restocked it. I think it was Viv Shears, wasn't it, that did all the restocking. They handpicked the fish to go in there for a fantastic day ticket later. And what, 12 years later, it's done a 49 common? And that's pretty amazing. Yeah. Pretty amazing. What else is in there?
Some good features. You've got Lee Mozza Morris. He explains how fishing more accurately can drastically improve your catch rates. Roy Russell looks back on an eventful year, which has had some of the best catches of his life. There's also contributions from Rob Burgess, Michael Farrell, and Ollie Bowles. Yeah. And to top it off, for a competition, you can win a new Witchwood stove.
I enter these comps every week. I've won nothing. Nothing. I wanted the Summit Bank Sticks, but no, we can't win. But yeah, get your copy of Carp Talks, $1.49 for the digital version online on your phone or your app, any phone, iPad, computer, whatever, pocketmags.com, only $1.49, or you can get a hard copy on a Tuesday from your local newsagent or stockist or through the post. I'm sure you can subscribe as well. Right, let's move on to this listener's question. Who was it who sent this in?
It was a regular listener, and this is his real name, he assures me, Cletus Wally Winfield.
Okay.
And he says, the UFC has its Hall of Fame. Have you considered a Carpcast Hall of Fame? Who would be your first three inductees and why?
Yeah, so I think we should have it. I mean, I don't think we can have a Hall of Fame because we are an internet show. So I think we should have a wall of fame. And an internet wall of fame, meaning we do it on the internet, and then maybe it's not quite as serious as an actual hall of fame. There'll be some there'll be some people that really deserve. Let's make some rules as to how you can get in the CCIWOF, the Carpcast Internet Wall of Fame. I think you have to have contributed something to fishing somehow. Now, it may be, I've just realised who our first one needs to be. I'll tell you that in a minute. We'll do it on the last show of every month. We'll induct somebody into our Wall of Fame. We'll make a page on the website, carpcast.com. Oh, thecarpcast.com, sorry. Don't even know our own website address. We'll make a little wall on there as well, so we'll put people's names up as and when. A bit more work for Reese, sorry, pal. But you've got to have contributed something to fishing. Now, it can be... It doesn't have to be... I mean, obviously, people like Rod Hutchinson are going to end up in there. You know, the Carp Strikes Back deserves on its own merits to go in the Wall of Fame. I'm sure we will induct Hutchie at some point. But it could be somebody more modern that may not have been around forever, but has just done something pretty significant. You know, I mean, the inventor of the SPOM, surely that's worthy of inducting to the Hall of Fame, to the Wall of Fame, sorry. And it could be something funny. You might have contributed something in an entertainment way. Or you got anything to add to that? Any other stipulations, Mark?
I would like to say this is in no way going up against anything that... Well, the Carp Talk Hall of Fame, which is, you know, the real official carp fishing Hall of Fame, well established. And this is us having a bit of fun. But, what popped into my head when you mentioned about... innovations and everything. You mentioned Mr. Spom. What about Mr. Ridge Monkey, whoever that is?
Certainly. I'm pretty sure he's going to be getting in there at some point. Although the Ridge Monkey is, it's an idea that has been around. You know, the Diablo was a smaller version of it, but those like sealed frying pans, I mean, you can get them all over eBay, like bigger ones. Have you seen them? They're like deep fill frying pans with two sides.
Oh, yeah, it's both. You know, the way is pretty much... followed on from the Diablo and, made it square.
Yeah, the way they've tailored it to carp fishing is fantastic, and I would not leave home without both of them. I've got the small one and the big one.
I can't think, where Ridge Monkeys, carp fishing, it is such, in a general scheme of things, a small industry. Why is it not, maybe even doing it, I don't know, but, kicking down the doors of Go Outdoors and places like that.
I went to a big outdoor centre, like a huge one, near one of the lakes I've been fishing. And when the guy realised there was a carp angler, I'd gone in there to buy some gas and a new stove. And he said, "Oh, have you heard of these Ridge Monkey thingies? Everyone's going on about them." This is a guy in a massive outdoor centre. I said, "Well, yeah, actually we do, run a fishing show and Ridge Monkey have a stand there and blah, blah, blah." We got a chat and he went, "Oh, everybody comes in and asks us if we've got them and we'd like to stock them." So I did mention this to one of the Ridge Monkey guys, and they're obviously keen to move into that market if they could.
I'm sure they can.
I mean, for however many anglers there are in the country, there's a lot more people that just use camping stoves and go camping.
And festivals and
exactly
everything.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a market. If they haven't moved into, they should be, because it's a fantastic product. But yeah, anyway, they may get inducted at some point. I mean, to be honest, it's the power bank thingy. I use more of Ridge Monkey. Gives me 20 odd charges of a phone. They're amazing. Not cheap, but amazing. But yeah, anyway.
How much do you use your phone?
A lot. I've watched the first.
I'm not going to ask what you're looking at.
I've watched the first 30 seconds of every porno known.
Twice.
No. So yeah, the CCIWOF, the Carpcast Internet Wall of Fame, is a new thing, and we're going to be inducting people monthly, I think. And I think the first one has to be a kind of serious one. And I propose Lenny Middleton for the hair rig.
Carp fishing.
Get him in.
Congratulations, Lenny Middleton. Wherever possible, we will. I mean, we've just come up with this idea. Thanks, Cletus Wally Winfield, for suggesting it. And I think it's a great idea and something we can have a bit of fun with over the year. We might even get a little certificate or something made up and send it to people. but Lenny Middleton, you changed a carp angler's life. For those people that never fished pre-hair rig, the impact that it had from, we were using sweet corn on the hook, we were using cubes of luncheon meat with the hook inside it. You'd thread, push the hook through the luncheon meat, trying not to split it in half, which wasn't always easy. You'd have a blade of grass underneath it, stop the hook pulling out, and you'd get a screaming run, and quite often you had to strike the rod to pull the hook through the bait. And quite often you just struck into thin air, and that never happened again. you might get five runs in a day on a run's water, and you could strike into fresh air on every single one of them. It was not uncommon not to land a single fish, or to even, get a fight to hook a single fish, like pre-hair rig. I remember side hooking boilies when I first got onto boilies. I actually had my PB carp when I was 11 years old. It was 11.5 pound from a place called Tegsnose Reservoir in Cheshire. I remember it was a side hooked boilie. That fish did actually hook itself. It dragged the rod in, an old 9-foot boat rod. But anyway, yeah, the difference that made, and my brain wouldn't have thought like that. It would not have thought about, well, what if we don't actually put bait on the hook? We just put bait near the hook. I mean, it was pretty crazy thinking. But we all take it for granted now. I mean, it's led on to D-rigs and all sorts of stuff, hasn't it?
Yeah. Where do you think fishing would be if they had not invented the hair rig? Would someone else have come up with it later at some date? Or would we still be side-hooking everything?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, obviously, once you realise that the carp can suck in from a distance, you probably realise that you don't have to have masked the hook. I mean, look at all the things we've got now, like the Fox Cigar liners, or Nash do the bread bombs, or there's lots of ways of connecting the zig foams and stuff to the back, like with bait bands. I mean, that would have been another way to have done it. It was to put a bait band round a boilie and just hook the hook through the bait band, but obviously you got the problems of slipping on the cast and stuff. It was a fantastic idea, and because of it, there is some argument over who invented the hair rig, but I think the general consensus is Lenny Middleton, who gave it to Kevin Maddox, who kind of publicised it. I think that was how it went down. If we're wrong, unlucky. Because Lenny Middleton, you are in the CC IWOF, our first inductee. We need a jingle, don't we? I'll get a jingle. We do.
Don't start singing, please.
What rhymes with CC IWOF? Yeah, cool. So, thanks, Cletus.
I don't know. You know, it reminds me of IHOPS.
IHOPS?
Yeah, have you ever been to America? It's the International House of Pancakes.
No.
And if you want to put on a stone with every meal, it's the place to go.
I'm absolutely very starving. Nice. So, yeah, that concludes this week's show. Grab your carp talk. Definitely check out the liquids. I'm sure you'll want to get on the dnabaits.com website. And until next week, we'll see you later.
See you then.